Okay. Well,
I guess we have less than a minute.
A lot less than a minute. Okay. We're on the air. Welcome to Tech This.
This is the wrong opening because this one cut off.
I must have got the wrong one again.
Oops.
I must have pulled it from the wrong place. I saw it in somewhere, but, well, anyway.
Okay, I can't listen to the...
Yeah, you're going to have a very strange effect if you start listening to the...
The feed and the phone, yes.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to let Byron take over this. He knows more about this than I do, so...
But it's your guys' show.
Yeah.
I guess what I'll do is I'll just I'll sort of introduce these guys and let you guys sort of take it over from here and interview. And if I have any questions or whatever, then I'll interject them where I can.
Yeah. Okay. Tom and Daryl certainly know their stuff.
As you guys remember back when Tom and Daryl and Dwayne and Steve were all in California and other places in the West. I was there watching the station and trying to keep it from crashing to a iceberg. Well, you know, we had our bumpy ride, but one of the really interesting shows along the way was the telephone show, the show that I did with Mark Burnet and Strom Carlson and Al Burnet, and it was just one hell of a show. And these guys have been in telephone freaking for years. They've been messing with their phone. Don't play with the phones, Mark. Don't play with your phones. So these guys have been playing with their phones for quite some time, and so I figured it would be kind of an interesting show to have these guys on and talk about freaking and telephones and all that kind of stuff. And Tom and Daryl also have had some experience. They've played with their phones quite a bit and read some publications, and you know they're into the scene. You know, they're cool with it, yeah. So I figured it would be kind of cool to have Strom and Mark and whoever might else join the conference, and Tom and Daryl and Dwayne sort of get together and talk about what was once possible with the telephone system, which was quite a bit.
Yeah, previous to the Statute of Limitations.
Yeah, the Statute of Limitations, yes, yeah. I remember her. I think she's in that New York Harbor or something, right?
Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Something like that. Well, welcome, gentlemen.
Definitely.
Glad you were able to get to be back with us. Well, not exactly back with us, but
back
with us.
With us and back with everybody, with Byron and the rest of the station. I guess I would point out that in case somebody doesn't really know any kind of this history, the whole idea of, I guess, what got to be known as phone phreaking came about in quite a few years ago, in the probably mid-60s, I would guess, was when most of it started. And it started from a number of different systems. Basically, there were just multiple ways of, and most of it was kind of a combination of exploring the phone system, some of it exploring it in effect as a giant computer, and part of it was, you know, trying to figure out ways to not get charged for phone calls, and in some cases making just test calls to see how things worked, and some of it was a matter of pretty much if you were going to talk to other people, you pretty much had to be able to make calls that weren't going to cost a lot in the days when it cost a great deal of money to make long-distance calls. And there were a whole bunch of people who kind of got to know each other over the years. And
even started conventions.
Into the mid-70s, there were, you know, little conventions, get-togethers, newsletters, all kinds of that sort of thing. And it got to be fairly well organized, although, you know, the phone company was hoping it would stay pretty small. And I think overall it wasn't gigantic.
The beginnings of it all was pretty much based on the fact that the phone company actually let their information be public.
In terms of how the system worked. And by knowing how the system worked, it allowed people to figure out how to create devices.
Basically, social engineer information out of other people.
And yep. Basically, the first of the systems were based on the old 2600 pulse, and it was simply interrupted similar to the interruption of a dial on a telephone, which the reason for that was that in the dial itself interrupted an electrical pulse to
voltage, actually
the voltage to create the step the relays in the old step phone systems. The problem with that is once during the I guess it was really around World War II, they started moving long distance into the microwave region and multiplexing phone calls on top of each other, and
was there a DC path through the entire phone call.
Yep.
So they had to be able to let the system know when the make and break occurred. So they did it with sound.
Yep. And they put it right on the same phone line that everybody was using, so it made it simpler. They didn't need separate lines, to one for the tone and one for the conversation, but it also made the whole system very vulnerable. And I guess some of the first phone freaks were people who could whistle that tone. And
one in particular was made very famous for that.
Right. Joe Ingrassia, I believe he was in Florida at the time. And there were definitely some other people. Not exactly sure, but right around the same period, there was also the creation of what became the black box, and in some cases the cheese box, which a lot of the bookies and some of the the mafia kinds would use to get betting records set around, and they would raid some little lady's apartment and find just a couple of phone lines going into it, and nobody, you know, they wouldn't be able to know where the calls originated. It was essentially two black boxes tied together. So, or at least one in a phone line. In any case, the...
we should probably let these...
Yeah, right. Basically, we probably brought people, not necessarily up to date, but at least we've...
Given a little back history, I guess.
A whole lot of people who decided, you know, in ways to start playing with this as kind of civil disobedience as a result of the late 60s movements. And that turned into some newsletters. The original Youth International Party line was probably the first one. I think it was like a demonstration in Washington, D.C., where it originated.
Didn't it become
in 1970.
TAP?
And eventually that became, yeah, TAP, which was technological. What the heck was that? I can't think of the rest of it. Technological something. Oh, American Party. That's what it was. And it also had another name. They went through two different names on it. But anyway, that was kind of how people communicated during the early days, plus lots of conference lines and just using the phone in various ingenious ways to connect people together.
A lot of the toll-free loop-arounds and the...
Yep. We kind of got involved in the early 70s, late 60s, and fiddled around with it and tried to follow it, at least mostly in terms of messing with it at all. We kind of stopped around 1975 when AT&T particularly started cracking down, and then there was a little bit of stuff after that, particularly a system we'll talk about later that we kind of discovered on our own that was going around in Chicago. I've never been able to determine that it existed anywhere else in the country, but what it had to do with is a way that the phone system would allow outside exchanges to contact 611 in a given area.
Which at the time was repair service.
Right, repair service was generally available since it was a three-digit number only in the local exchange. And if the operator needed to identify a trouble phone to an adjoining adjoining 611 office or some other 611 office in the area, they didn't have a way to do it. Well, they put one in. They put in call diverters, which were easily
bypassed.
You could hit a couple of numbers to screw up the system, and then it would just give you a new dial tone, and you could dial off of it, and you got to dial within the phone system in Chicago that was normally used by the telephone company, which was interesting.
You could talk to Inward, basically.
Yes, well, you could actually talk to... Yeah, I think it probably went... I doubt if it went through Inward. It went through... It basically was just an internal system that the various phone company people used and had their own operator. And one of the interesting things that I remember is because AT&T was not in New Mexico, there was no way to reach New Mexico. They didn't have the 505 area code in it. But pretty much anything else could be reached. And the only thing you had to do was tell them what number you were calling from, and they would put the call through. And it was rather interesting. So anyway, that died a couple of years later, but... So how, I take it you're kind of like younger, right?
Who, me?
Any of you.
All of you guys.
Well, Strom is younger, yes.
Okay.
Yes, I'm much younger.
Oh, okay. Approximately what age are the others of you? Because I don't think I ever had a clue.
Yeah, this is Mark Bernay, late 50s.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Strom Carlson, early 20s.
Uh-huh. Does any of this sound familiar, or are we way off base, or, you know, have we got...
No, you're very, very on base. Yeah, that's all very true. But depending on where people grew up and where they got interested in the phones, they may have different stories.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I got interested in phones in a GTE territory, and I figured out ways to make free calls that were only relevant to that exact type of GTE system, which is only about three or four places in the country that have.
Yeah, that must have been interesting.
We had a similar situation with what was the name?
Centel.
Centel. They had some interesting little tidbits on their payphones and stuff.
Yep. And one of the things...
Here in Las Vegas, Centel ran a very interesting, unique type of switching system, which was a Simmons or Stromberg Carlson rotary switching system.
Yep. I think that was the same one.
It
yeah,
actually
unlike anything else.
Yeah,
it actually dialed the number and then dialed and then pulsed the number of the calling party. So you
yeah,
heard
well, the,
both
on
sets
the
of
first
tones.
Incarnation, actually, what it did was just pulse out in Multifreaks the number you dialed. It would repeat that, and then in the later version, it would not only do that, but then repeat your number back to you, which was actually for their use, too. But it would let it know. It basically just put it out on a tandem and then shot it back to let it know that it was dialing your number, you know, who had dialed the number.
Right.
And the other thing that was cute is at payphones, if you could dial the switch hook quick enough, you could get into either an Inward or some other numbers, like I could get to the Sun Times in Chicago, which was
222222. Or 222-1111.
Right. But it generally didn't let longer numbers go through.
They had some kind of circuit or something. For one thing, they had a little bitty... They were very sneaky. Actually, I suppose it was perfectly logical. The switch hook was a little bit loose and not in... You know, it was like springy. So you had... It was not constant when you would hold the... When you would kerchunk it. Like a regular phone. If you anybody who's proficient with a switch hook can pretty much dial numbers fairly well, but with these things you'd push it down, and it wouldn't quite it never was quite the same place in the how far you had to hold it down each time you. Dropped
the
switch
hook. Was this in Chicago, you're saying?
No, this was actually
in
a small town
Illinois.
Called Dixon, Illinois.
Well, the thing was that some payphones actually had a mercury switch in the switch hook, which made flashing more difficult.
That may very well have been what they did.
Yep.
Yeah.
I never knew.
Generally, in Los Angeles and in Seattle, where I spent most of my time, we could hook switch any numbers at all from payphones easily.
Mm-hmm.
But then later on, when the single slot phones came out, they had a time delay sort
yeah.
of thing.
And of course, the other thing is that once they put in this case, in those old phones, they were not true payphones in the modern sense. They didn't actually have an extra pair of wires going to it. It was just a simple phone with a
connected the dial.
All they did was turn off the dial if you didn't put the coin in. It was not.
Well, I don't think the payphones ever had a second pair of wires going to them. It's all voltage and grounding tricks to handle coin check mm-hmm. and coin return.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like in Pacific Belt territory, they still have a lot of the old Western Electric single slot phones. And what happens basically is that when you first you have to at the dial tone, you have to deposit your money and then dial your number before making a local call. And after you dial your...
Uh-oh.
Hmm.
Things went away.
Yeah.
I think we lost them, Byron. Check the phone.
This is weird.
What's that?
Well, I heard a dial tone way in the background.
Hmm.
Are they still there?
Hey, guys, are you still there? Oh, boy. We may have...
Yeah, I think we lost them.
Where's the paper at?
It's right here. Sorry about that. And they will undoubtedly notice that we disappeared. Do you need me to read that?
No.
Okay, I guess I wouldn't want to read it over the air.
We don't want to
read
it on the air anyway.
That's right.
But
don't forget the star seven.
Yeah.
Okay. We lost the connection to
yes,
the phone.
We did. By the way, we forgot to point out this is tech. This for the.
Uh oh.
What?
That's not good.
Yeah, I think he must have misdialed.
I think he did too.
What is the date today? The. Haven't even
sixth.
Thought about that.
It's the sixth.
This is the sixth
of January.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, not January. It's
February
6th.
Yeah, February 6th, 2000. And this is the
and
first
2004.
Hour, 2004, and this is the first hour of the Tech This Show.
Hopefully it'll work this time.
We will hopefully have people to talk to.
Yes.
Things just kind of disappeared.
Yes, we lost the...
Hey, guys, you still there? Okay, we lost you. Sorry about that. Let me get you back on the air.
Well, push the button. Okay, it should be there now. Are you there?
Yes. Hello.
Yeah.
Hello there.
Oh, hello. Sorry about that. For some reason or other, the line dropped.
Hmm.
Okay. Where was I when you lost me? And I'll continue.
You were talking about the certain thing in Los Angeles. They had certain phones in Los Angeles on the single slot phones.
Okay. Yeah. The way the single slot phone works is that. And I'm sorry if I already repeated any of this. I'm not sure exactly where I got cut off. The way the single slot works is that when you deposit your money at the dial tone, right now it's 50 cents. So if you put in a coin, you'll hear nothing. Then you put in the second coin, and then you hear both coins kind of falling through the totalizer, and it makes a noise, kind of like beep, 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 beep.
Yep.
And that
right.
noise actually doesn't do anything at this point. That noise has absolutely nothing to do with the local call.
Right.
And then... So once, and then you dial your number, and after you dial your number, there's kind of a kind of noise.
Mm-hmm.
And that noise is the central office equipment running a ground test on your phone. So if that ground is present, then that means that you've deposited the money, and then your local call's gone through. However, if the ground is not present, then that means that you have not deposited enough money for a local call, and then instead of putting your call through, it'll send you to a recording that says, you know, please deposit the required amount for a local call and try again,
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
And, of course, that's why people used to be able to put safety pins through the handset cord and short out the thing to ground and make it think there was money.
What's that?
Well, yeah,
I think that would probably still work.
That can conceivably still work because Pacific Bell, I know, still does that. And anywhere that you find a Western Electric single slot payphone or any CO-controlled payphone like that,
mm-hmm.
you can still do that, technically.
But, of course, most of them are now the Fortress phone type big, heavy, armored cable. And so unless somebody's mean enough to break that, it would be a little difficult to do. And, of course, they seal...
Or the wiring.
Or get into the wiring inside the...
Yeah, so sometimes a payphone will have the wiring totally exposed.
That's true.
Yes.
do something right.
And a lot of times they seal the microphone into the cartridge shell. It used to be, of course, you could unscrew that, and which actually probably made a lot of problems for some of the later journalists, because journalists would one of the biggest ways for people to feed stories back to the radio stations they worked for was to undo the mouthpiece and alligator clip into place. And of course, a lot of them, they kind of glued that into place to keep people from fiddling with it.
Doing that very thing.
Well, you could just do an acoustic coupler.
Yeah.
That's true.
And that's what eventually happened, and eventually people started
generally speaking, you know, I think the acoustic coupler thing, I don't think people, at least the journalists, didn't tend to like that as much as a direct connect, but I guess they wouldn't have had much choice eventually.
That's true.
Actually, I don't know if I should tell it now or wait till later, switch topics, but I have a very funny story about journalists directly connecting into a payphone and the consequences of that.
Oh, feel free to do it if you'd like. Yep. We're a very loose-knit bunch of people here, and things fly in all kinds of directions. And
yeah. Okay, I had a friend a long time ago who helped found a small radio station in San Francisco. A wealthy man liked to go around the country and start radio stations that he would then turn over to be community, you know, free radio stations for the poor community.
Sort of like Pacifica.
So a friend of mine was the engineer. Actually, two friends of mine were the engineers that he hired to build this station.
Wasn't that like,
visit sometimes.
I'm trying to think, one of the people I remember who used to do that, in the, at least in the mid-70s, I think was like Lorenzo, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that was the name of the guy who financed it.
Yeah.
Okay, Lorenzo Milan or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah, yes, Milam, something like that, exactly. What was the name of the guy who financed it? I don't think I ever met him, but I had two friends who were engineers who he hired to build the station.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they like to do is do live broadcasts of concerts, but they had no radio or certainly no satellite equipment back then, and they had no radio way of getting of doing a remote broadcast. So what they would do is go find some payphone at the concert hall and tap into it, and they would always want to tap directly into the wiring of the payphone, and they would broadcast that way. Or any phone line that they could find in the concert hall. It didn't have to be a payphone. They could find a legitimate one. So they wanted to broadcast this concert from a park, and I was going to meet them over there because I had some microphone stands they wanted to borrow. This concert was so poor, they didn't even have microphone stands for the concert, let alone the radio station. Okay. So I drive out there to meet my friend, and I see his car, but I don't see him. And then I kind of look up in the air, and I see that he's sitting up on top of a phone pole. He had always collected... you know, we always called it his phone man drag. You know, he had collected all the stuff, the climb poles and the utility belts and just everything that made him look like a regular phone man.
Mm-hmm.
So I see him up there, and I just wait for a while until he finally comes down, and he explains that the reason he was up there is that they searched all around the park and they couldn't kind of find any payphones close enough. But this wiring, this overhead cable was close enough so they could run something over to where the concert was. So what he did is he just tapped into each line and turned up there until he found one where nobody seemed to be home. Because he tapped in each line and did the ringback number to see if anyone would answer.
Mm-hmm.
So he found one that worked and nobody answered, and he tapped into that. He figured he'd use that to broadcast the concert and just hope that no one gets home and starts getting on that line, right?
Yeah. You
can. Okay. So about 5 minutes later, as we're talking, about 5 minutes later, police cars drive up and arrest both of us.
Oops.
Oops. Yeah. And it turns out that one of the people who he tapped, where they tapped into their line and rang them back and said, oh, sorry, this is just the phone company testing. Better than that, one of those people was the captain of the local police station.
Yeah. Oops.
So the guy looks out his window and doesn't see any phone truck. He sees someone sitting on top of the phone pole right outside his window, just sees a private car, not a phone van.
Mm-hmm.
So he calls the police, or maybe he called the phone company first to verify whether anyone was supposed to be out there, and they weren't. After a while, they believed me and let me go, but they really did arrest him and charge him with wiretapping and stuff.
Oopsie.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things, of course, is that was during the time when they were using the either step or the
crossbars
or whatever, where if you were in a local connection, you could get high-quality audio back across a phone system with no problem.
As long as you were in the same central office.
Yep. Once they went to the like the DMS-100s and the ESS systems and all that, they restricted the audio quality because they wanted to stack a lot of calls, even in some cases locally. It just restricted the audio. I remember working at an uplink, or actually I didn't, but some friends of ours, one of them is in the other room, was working on an uplink when we were doing shows to satellite like 10, 12 years ago, and they turns out that even within the uplink facility, calling from one phone to another, you still went through the restriction and couldn't get more than about 3K off the line.
Was that on a 1ESS? Because as far as I know, the 1ESS is still, you know, it's electronically controlled, but it still is very much space division switching. Mm-hmm. There's relays and whatnot that make, you know, if you call a Centrex on a 1ESS, you'll still hear a lot of ka-chunk noises as the relays close and open to complete your call.
Mm-hmm.
So that would probably have been on a time division switch like a DMS or a 5ESS.
Probably
or
was, yeah.
That most likely was.
It was near Detroit.
Yep, it was in the Royal Oak area. But
by 1992, a lot of phone switches were digital, although there was a lot of analog stuff still out there.
Aha. Mm-hmm. Oh, it certainly was frustrating that there wasn't a whole lot left, because it was real nice. In the 70s, I fed to a radio station, and I followed a song with a sequel that the station didn't have. And
hello?
Hello?
What the heck is that?
I don't know. But it's noisy, whatever it is. Probably affecting the radio only, let's hope.
Probably, but making it much more difficult for me to hear.
That's true.
Yeah.
It sounded like a blender to me.
Yeah, it does.
Exactly
what
does blender
like.
Do with phones? Is it the high-speed rotary mechanism that we're testing out now?
Yeah, they tried to get the panel switches faster and faster until it finally started sounding like a blender.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, I think what happened is there may be a cake being made. I don't know. And what we're using to monitor this is a transmitter, a small transmitter and radios, so that's probably what happened.
Yes. Very interesting.
Just make sure that if the cake is round, that it is in the shape of a rotary dial.
Yeah,
that would be good.
That's it.
But, that was certainly some of the interesting stuff. Yeah, there was. That was definitely a good story. Not for him, however.
Right, yeah. Well, he got that go, so I'm sure it was good for him.
Oh, yeah. But the...
He actually got some penalty. I forget. He got some fine in community service or something. Or
mm-hmm.
Mm. And he was only trying to...
So some of the neighbors told them that they never saw me at the top of the pole, so they believed me and let me go pretty quickly.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, that was good. You came out on unscathed, so to speak.
Right.
Which is always good. The one of the strangest things that ever happened to me was actually I met someone through, I guess I can say his name, Joe Ingrassia. We had been talking to him at various times. Of course, he's now changed his name, but that's who he was at the time.
Right.
But anyway. We were carrying on conversations at various times with him, and one day while we were talking to him, someone else dropped in on the line. He was using a step-by-step switch, and there was this strange little quirk about it. If you had a number that ended in 00, I think it was, if the person who was calling you got a busy signal, they could... There was a way, and honestly, I'm not good enough to do this, so I can't even necessarily explain it right. But in some way or another, you could, if you listened very carefully and timed it just right, you could make, you could actually drop in on the line that was busy.
Yep.
Basically,
you conference. You needed to have two phone lines that were sequential,
mm-hmm.
and you would dial all but the last number, and then just time that last number properly. And you'd end up dropping right in on the first line.
Instead of being jumped to the second.
Yep.
It was rather strange.
But anyway, we met a good friend of ours that way.
And spent an awful lot of time talking to him. But it was...
The way that worked was if you were on 00, mm-hmm. on line number 00, and line number 09 was not busy, what you would dial is you could dial 091 and then up plopping into 00.
Okay.
Is the way that would work.
Okay. It's been a long time since that happened, and I do remember him explaining it, but I wasn't quite as technical, so it didn't quite. And it's interesting because thinking about it, most people would think, oh, 09, then the next number would be 01. No, not really.
Not in phone systems.
Not in the true sense of the words. A lot of times they could fix it so it looked that way, but it really was 0900 rather than 00. I mean, rather than 0 yeah. follow 1 following 0, 9
yeah,
following.
Yeah, 0000 is the very end of the selector.
Exactly.
Yeah, and step, it starts off at 1 and goes all the way up to 0.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in like... In panel and crossbar, it's 0 through 9. 0 is the first thing, and then 1 is after 0.
Mm-hmm.
But step is all based on the pulses of your dial, so 0 is at the very end of a selector.
Yes. And there's another little cute thing that people may or may not remember or know about, was that in the early days of phones, if you were on a cross, if you were on a step switch, the early ones, if you were talking to someone and you had called them and they hung up, that didn't help. They really didn't hang up. There was no way for them to get off of that call until you, the calling party, hung up. And there was some problems with that over the years, and eventually they put in timeout devices on all those lines. But originally, you could leave it there all day long, and it would never hang up.
GTE was
potential.
What's that?
There were ways you could. I found out later. I think I learned about this after I had any step switches available where I was living. But I found out that later people had done a lot of experiments with voltages, just taking high voltages and putting them in the phone line. And one of the things they could do with their voltages was they could knock someone off in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
By putting a strong voltage in the opposite direction in or something, they could influence the relays and knock the call off.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember the details. But.
I'd like to confirm how good these guys are. Yes, that was a blender. I was having dinner down in the kitchen when the lady was making a cake, and at first I thought the same thing. Oh, I'm just sharing this over the transmitter. Because I bet that's on the same circuit in the back, what are the back EMF or whatever.
Yeah, it definitely made some noises there. It was
well,
cute.
I mean, your ears get trained to listen to, you know, for phone noises, so by that time a blender is like, yeah, it's a blender.
It's a blender.
And going back to the step switching, what used to happen was actually before the timeout feature, there was actually an alarm that would go off after some time. The switchman would actually have to clear it manually.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't actually leave it up for 24 hours a day. A switchman mm-hmm. would clear it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a building that was attended and if the switchman bothered to listen to alarms and stuff like that. But,
no, there's that.
So in some cases,
I heard a story alarm. Once yeah. about a step switchman in some general telephone area. You know, the telephone repairman I was talking to was playing chess with him in the switch room. And so this is a step-by-step switch room, so you hear all the step switches going all the time. It's very noisy, clunk, 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 clunk. So what happens is there's one little tiny switch off in the distance that kind of makes it a bad clunk. And this switchman, who has been concentrating on the chess game the whole time, perks up and runs off to that exact switch and starts fixing it.
Well, that would not...
That's how tuned your ears would be.
That would not surprise me, considering, you know, if he'd been there a long time and was, like you said, attuned to it. It's like when you visit somebody that's got a lot of clocks. You don't hear them after a while. You don't hear them. You go ahead and go to sleep. But your mind just sort of overlooks that. That's an interesting noise.
Hold on just a second, I'll
be back. He has another phone call.
Yep.
You'll have that. But I would have to say that many of the people that I've known over the years that have been into this, you know, the science of it, if you will, you find out so many absolutely fascinating things about the whole system itself. It's not just phone calls can be made free. I mean, this was certainly an incentive, I suppose, for some of us. But more than anything else, we were interested in finding out just exactly what was going on inside the system. And there was, and it was funny because in those days, we had friends in the phone company. I knew someone who was an operator. I knew someone else who was a lineman. And so, you know, but neither of these people knew
the other's info.
And you'd have to sort of piece it together yourself. And it was always weird for me to notice that, you know, this guy didn't know so-and-so, and this other guy knew that, but he didn't know the other thing, you know. And it was just, it seemed awfully strange.
Well, they didn't want any one person to know everything.
I think that was probably it. I think they were keeping their security.
That's
by...
pretty powerful if you know all that information.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, is exactly what their worry was.
Mm-hmm.
But partly,
I think people just... A lot of people just do their job, and they just want to do
their job well,
but they really don't care about anything else.
Well, that was it.
That's true.
Neither of these guys really cared that much about the system itself. They knew their particular aspect of it, and they were, you know, oh, I worked there all day. What in the world would I want to think about phones when I'm not working, you know?
Yeah. It's like the taxi driver would never go for a weekend car trip sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it was just it was funny because I did learn a lot of stuff from these people, but I had to sort of figure ways to get it out of them because it wasn't something they thought about. If I asked a question and they didn't know the answer, they would, you know, some of them would actually do their best to find out for me, but it was not something that they would have normally thought to ask, or even would have had any reason to think to ask. But I found out an awful lot of interesting things.
Yep. Yeah.
One of them was the way they did they changed the ringback system in the mid 70s, so you had to like dial this 200 number plus trying to remember exactly what it was, but basically if you in the Chicago area, if you dialed anything other than the number that was the correct number after the 200, it would give you a strange combination of busy
signal—not ringback, but number readback.
Or readback, right? It'd give you a kind of a combination of dial tone and busy signal. And if you,
I think they had that Northwest Indiana. It was something like 1-200-202, and then there were some other numbers, and I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But then, if you dialed the correct number, you got that number. If you dialed something else, any other set of digits, it would send you into the local CO company office, and they would expect you to give your name, and then they would give you the number you dialed
that you called from.
Now, the name you're giving was supposed to be a tax name or something?
Yes, exactly.
Did they actually look that up, or did they just...
I think in some cases they were kind of careless about it, although in most cases there were only a select number of people who worked there. So
luckily
they
we knew one of them.
Usually know, you know, whose voice was calling in.
But they didn't necessarily know the voice, but they knew the name. They probably had a list of names.
Yep.
In any case, the guy that we were able to use our friend's name quite often. Worked out very nicely. You could find out what number you were. You know, you could go into a payphone or something that didn't have the number written on it, and you could actually get that number.
Right. There was a time when operators would give that out pretty freely, too.
Mm-hmm. Chicago is a very Chicago is an interesting market in one respect. They have a public name and address.
And have had it since the 60s.
Customer name and address.
Okay.
And
was it
796-9600?
You mean public in the sense that the public is supposed to call it? Or
yes.
Yeah, they advertise the number and everything.
And they've been doing
it. 312-796-9600.
Yes,
yep. That's it.
And they've done that since at least the 60s when it used to be 2080.
Right, it was an internal phone company number, 2080, and it only worked in the exchanges that were exactly in the city of Chicago. If you couldn't get it to work in the Oak Park, which is a nearby suburb, they didn't have the number or the information, but they had it throughout the entire city and all the exchanges of the city. but it was actually it wasn't was it just 2080 or was it the exchange in 2080?
Might have been the exchange, but I don't recall anymore.
I don't either.
I'm thinking it was just that number.
It might have been.
But obviously it had to be funneled through your local exchange somehow because it was only a four-digit number.
Correct.
Well, I mean, if you were on a small step exchange, local dialing may have very well been four digits.
Well, we were in Chicago under this circumstance.
Right, but I think in the early 70s, I think they were still, a lot of them were still
very few step exchanges. Almost everything was at least number one crossbar, and most of them were number five.
Yeah.
No, but Chicago had panel, though, didn't it? So it wouldn't have been a step. I think Chicago had panel. But
okay, that's possible, but it certainly sounded like step. To me, being the novice I am, I wouldn't be able to tell you. But they were the first ones to be switched over to ESS.
Yep.
Number one ESS.
You know, the reason I'm thinking that, I remember Chicago has some general telephone surrounding it.
I remember
reading an article once about a translator from the general telephone step over to panel and the difficulties they had building a translator between those two.
I'll bet. I don't even know. You might want to actually explain a little bit about panel because I'm not sure I know anything about that.
Okay, because panel is by far my favorite switching system. If you ever actually go into a place that has one still, and there are museums, at least one museum that still has one,
cool.
It's just so fascinating to watch. And there's also the noises from panel are quite unique and stuff. Panel was developed because of New York, that the step switches just couldn't really keep up with the population and the growth of telephones in New York in the early days. They were looking for something better. And this was, you know, before any electronics or anything like that.
Okay, what would that be? I mean, how does that compare to crossbar or you know, the various?
Oh, totally different.
Okay.
Panel is not a cross-point thing whatsoever.
Okay.
Panel is more like step in the sense that there's something sequentially moving around.
Okay.
But it's totally different. Instead of having step switches that go up and across and a little module, panel switches are very long vertical things, maybe about 8 feet tall.
Okay.
And there's rods that actually move up and down through a fraction of that distance. It's hard to explain in words. You need to see pictures and movies of it and stuff. But there's a motor for each bank of panel switches. There's a motor that rotates maybe two shafts that go along the whole width of the thing down at the bottom. And then there's clutches that click in and make a particular rod go up or down, and the rod has contacts on it that then go along a frame of contacts in a vertical way. It's just a radically different from step, but closer to that than the crossbar.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way that panel communicates from one central office to another is in a step pulsing sort of way, but backwards, called revertive pulsing.
Ooh.
The far away switches, the switch that you're calling, starts sending you a bunch of pulses, and you at your end count those pulses, and you send it a pulse back telling it when to stop.
Ooh.
And it then switches to the next bank, and the next bank starts sending you pulses, and then you tell it when to stop, and so on.
I see.
But it was also coded, just the way that they built the switches, it would not send four groups of one through 10 pulses. It wouldn't do that. There was a coding scheme that I have written down somewhere. I certainly don't have it memorized, where the four digits of the last number would turn into five sets of digits being pulsed back at you in a certain coded way and stuff like that.
Interesting.
So
it sounded totally different from with a call going through, plus it's just very interesting to watch the machinery moving around.
You were talking about the different sounds of the various phone switches. Does anybody, like, whether it's an MP3 file or whatever, has anybody made this stuff out there so we could hear that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I run a phone page, a web page called phonetrips.com.
Oh, right. Oh, I know about phone
trips.
And there's a lot of panel on there. I love
okay.
panel.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I certainly have heard some of the phone trips and loved those, but I didn't know the sounds were out there. I'll have to look that up.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Evan Dorbell has a section on that page, and he has one called the Panel Lovers recording that just has nothing but panel noises on it.
Oh, cool. Okay. I will definitely have to see if I can get an idea where, you know, what I might have heard, because it does sound like something that somehow escaped me. I, you know, certainly knew about a lot of the others, but I don't remember particularly noticing that one.
Now, if you were in a suburb, though, you may have been in general telephone territory.
This was definitely Bell.
Oh yeah, we were definitely on Illinois Bell.
Yeah, all the close suburbs were Bell. It was, I think, farther out, wasn't it?
Yes.
There were a few exceptions to that, but I think,
like, Des Plaines, I think.
Yeah, Des Plaines actually was.
That was the Centel office.
The Centel. Well, originally, I don't think it was Centel. I think it was. I'm not sure. Actually, it might have been.
They did change names of her companies a few times.
I think they did at least. Sometime in the 70s, I know they still had one of those telephone recordings for their company that was based out of Des Plaines. So.
Yeah. Oh, that was a lot of fun too, to listen to the various telephone company propaganda lines that used to exist.
I have a couple of those on the phone trip stage. I do have a couple of those, just random days of the Pacific telephone one.
Yeah, the Pacific Telephone News line from 1968 or so, like 1968, 1969.
Wow.
Something like that, probably.
Sometime in the late 60s.
Mm-hmm. I wish I had recorded more of that stuff. I might have a communicator from sometime in the 70s on tape.
When I first met you guys, you talked about, was that the communicator? There was something I think when I first met you either had just went away or was still there in this area here in Macomb.
Yes, it was in Chicago.
Yeah.
It came from downtown Chicago as the Illinois Bell Communicator.
Okay.
Then it switched to Springfield.
Yeah, I made it an 800 number. But it was originally it was one of those that did not charge. It was it was an unsupervised call. You could dial it from any payphone in the city of Chicago and it didn't charge you anything.
Right. No, that was in the days, of course, when payphones were not dial tone coin first.
Right.
That's true.
There were several types of payphones. There was the original. Well, not the original necessarily, but the most basic one is post-pay, where you dial the number and then it actually goes through, and the other party will only hear you once you put in the dime.
Which means that putting in the dime connects the mouthpiece to the...
GTE was fond of that.
Yes.
Yeah. And then there was prepay, where you picked up the phone and nothing happened until you put in the dime, and then that completed the ground and then got you the
I always hated that, because I'm like, well, what happens if you have an emergency, no money, you know?
That was exactly the states and municipalities demanded what they called dial-tone first phones. Basically,
that's what you have today.
They started saying, okay, you can raise the rates if you put these in. And you know, it's funny how quickly they found a way to put those in.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing was, you you could put your dime in, but you'd always get it back if you at the time it was a dime. Ooh, thinking about phones for a dime, phone calls for a dime.
Yike! Not anymore.
Not in my lifetime.
No.
No, but the other trick for the post-pay ones, there was a trick. Since all they did, when you drop the dime in, it would just connect the microphone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, earphones can be...
Microphones.
Will work as a microphone also, but not as good quality, much softer.
Right.
So on those post-pay phones, you could call someone and then just start yelling into the earphone, and they would hear you fairly well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Call that way, but,
now, I take it the dime just made an electrical connection, or how did that...
Yep.
Well, it would work a relay, because the dime would just go through and hit a switch. Just
right.
Which would then work a relay.
It tripped a relay and...
And GTE had something like semi-dial tone first, which was basically a useless dial tone until you put in a coin.
Mm-hmm.
It told you the phone was working, but you couldn't do a thing until you put in the coin.
Right. And some of them used reverse battery on pay phones.
Yeah, the reversal was to let the phone know that the call had supervised.
Mm-hmm. And in some cases, they did it so the touch tones wouldn't work until you put the dime in.
Right.
Which is exactly the reason we would learn how to hook switch the calls, so to get a
mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
Right.
And the other thing is you'd want to have a little pocket dialer once those became available, because sometimes once a call went through, It would also invert battery, and you could no longer additionally touch tone. And in the early days, for most people, that wasn't a problem because there were very few banking services or anything else that ever used them. But there were a few things that did use them, and you'd want to be able to touch tone.
Like if you got
also for your own answering machine. By the time they came out with touch tone operator and answering machine,
yep.
that became the problem.
That's true.
If you're going to page a drug dealer, you need to be able to do that.
Yike.
Well, that's one of the reasons a lot of times they stop that.
That's probably
that was
true.
That was certainly their excuse. In
that's
many
also
cases.
Why they took out a huge number of phones in Chicago. I mean, there's just and they
some
shut
of them they turn them off at night. Now that really, I'm sitting out here in this bad neighborhood, and I need to make a phone
call. My car is dead. You know,
my car has died, and I needed to make an emergency phone call. I'm sorry, you're not a drug dealer. You can't call.
Right.
Oopsie. That's why they invented cell phones, folks.
Right.
Yep.
And honest to goodness, probably the biggest reason that there aren't as many payphones today as there used to be is the cell phone.
It's the cell phone, exactly, because when you've got a cell phone, who the heck wants to use this old dirty payphone?
Yeah, well, that you have to pay, you know, $3 or $4 for the first 3 minutes or something.
And that may or may not work.
Right.
Right.
I have not collected your dime.
Is that an alleged dime?
Your alleged dime. Dime.
Please deposit 5 cents for the next 30 seconds.
There was a way that operators were taught to speak in the old days where they would say things like nine
and dime.
Seven. I mean, they would... enunciate the words very clearly.
Well, they did it especially because the early part of last century, when phone systems first went nationwide, the problem was that over those very noisy lines, because they hadn't developed good amplifiers, if you didn't do that, you couldn't tell what she was saying.
Right. It would sound coming like this. You really couldn't make it out.
That's right. All of the S's turned into F's.
Yeah. And at that point, 5 and 9 kind of become almost indistinguishable from each other.
Yep. So they had them, they made sure that they said nyan.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't say five, because they would have had the same problem.
Exactly.
So only the 9 got the interesting treatment.
And of course, there's the Mark Brene version of the German word for no.
Well, niner. Yeah, pilots had the same problem, but except pilots just came up with a different brand, and they would say niner.
Yeah, I heard that.
Instead of nine,
pilots and
still do it.
You know, some ham radio operators, CBUs.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yep. And they come up with a phonetic alphabet.
Alphabet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It's hard to do a phonetic number, though.
Yeah.
One of the things that I remember reading one of the books, Bell books on that I thought was fascinating was that in some areas they would in effect have phantom phone lines. They would put in a couple of hybrids and then you could put another phone between the two hybrids and in effect get a third line out of two lines.
Yeah, you put a transformer in there, yeah. It was very interesting.
So actually, I started to mention before the one place you can still see panel today, and they also have a demonstrator of that phantom circuit stuff. They actually will make one right in front of you and show you how it works.
Oh wow!
And now, what's the new name, Strongport? It used to be called the Vintage Telephone Equipment Museum. It's in Seattle, and they changed the name recently.
But oh, they did.
But it's still, I forget their official name now. But if you go to their webpage, they have it, and I forget what their URL is.
Let me pull it up.
Yeah, let's go find that. But they have a new name on there. But anyway, it's still open to the public in Seattle, but maybe only on Tuesdays unless you call in advance.
That's me.
I noticed.
And it's now called the Museum of Communications.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are they still open only on Tuesdays? Just get out the URL, and it has all the information on there.
Yeah, it's http://www.scn.org/tech/telmuseum, which is TELMUSEUM.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds neat.
Yes.
One of the things
they have They have a lot of just phones and pay phones and operator equipment. They have a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things that they have that's really unique is that they have full-blown switching machines.
Cool.
That were taken out of service and that they're maintained by ex-employees, by telephone pioneers or retired employees of the company.
There's
so
another.
They have a real panel switch. They have a real number one crossover switch, a real number five crossover switch, all functioning, and you can pick up phones and make calls through them and watch the switches move.
That's neat.
That
I'd like to try that.
They used to have a display like that at the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago. I don't know if it's still there, but they used to.
It was
to.
Not that elaborate, though.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, it was probably just a step. They have one of those museum display units to show how step works, but that was just one very tiny little thing.
One of the things that when we first got a satellite dish that we played with was the ability to listen to some of the phone calls by using a shortwave radio and tuning it to the
various frequencies,
basically between 4 and 8 megacycles hooked up to the output. I think it was just like the audio output went into the
On the transponder that had those on it, yes.
Right, you'd take the audio output from the transponder and then feed it into the antenna input of the radio, and you could actually tune the various microwave signals that were being sent from place to place across the country.
You could listen to the various supergroups and...
Yep, and that was neat.
TV sets also, but...
What's that?
Yeah, I've heard of people doing that by modifying television sets.
Well, that's usually done.
Myself, so I don't know any
that was doing cell phones mostly, actually, listening to TV. You could do that with the police calls, too,
yep.
In the old days.
But the thing with the shortwave, it was basically they were, in effect, AM frequency modulated, and they were just
no, they
really
were amplitude modulated.
Or amplitude modulated, I mean. They were very narrow carriers, and... you'd only hear one side of the conversation. That was the big problem. One of the last ones of those to disappear was the Alaska feed. Stuff between here and Alaska was about the last satellite stuff that I know of. But it was pretty interesting.
And occasionally
when did that disappear?
What's that?
When did that disappear?
I think mid-90s, if I'm not badly mistaken. Might have been early 90s.
The occasionally you will still hear some satellite communications from various foreign countries, but most of it's done as either microwave or fiber now. And even some of the Alaska circuits have become fiber.
Yeah, I don't think any of those are fed anymore.
Even if they're fed by satellite, they're not fed by that satellite.
Well, come to think of it, if they are fed, they're probably digital now.
Yes.
Obviously, this was still analog stuff. And
yep.
It's probably, some of it may still be there, but it's going to be digital, and you'd have to figure a way to tune it in.
Yep.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, I don't know anything about the Alaska phone system formally, but I just took a visit there 2 or 3 years ago. And the circuits sure sounded old-fashioned and analog sort of stuff. It just sounded like something I hadn't heard for years in the lower 48 states.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. I mean, I know that, you know, the conversion to the digital and the conversion to the new kinds of switches have been happening for years, but I was wondering if there was any part of the United States, whether it's the middle of Montana or in Alaska, that maybe some small phone company, just... in the middle of nowhere still has an old system.
I'm going to have to run a station ID here, so can you hang on for just a couple of seconds? We'll be right back.
The search for extraterrestrial intelligence, also known as SETI, is not the only group sending signals into outer space. We too are hoping there's life on other planets. From the internet to space, the universe, and beyond, this is the Wookiee Satellite Radio Network, AMC 7, Transponder 5, 7.5 Wideband Audio. Brought to you by Superstar Netlink Turner Vision. Their number is 1-800-395-9557.
For the best in talk, tunes, and more, this is RFD.
Hello, everybody out there in Internet Radio Land. This is your football buddy, Sam. You're listening to Gator Radio on Nelly.
One week for the night.
No, I'd love it, sorry.
You don't want to pull that on me because I'll shoot you.
Now what was that all about?
WTND LE McComb.
Okay, there we go. Getting
on. As I was saying before, the switches that are left, as far as the old electromechanical stuff, there's none of that. But there are about 100 to 150 number one ESS switches left in North America.
Mm-hmm. I think Chicago may very well have some of those.
Chicago has four of them.
Okay.
There's three in Chicago, and there's one that serves Oak Park.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It is interesting because they have a completely different sound than the later ones. They still sound mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
They are.
In fact, there is a hospital in Chicago, and I have to find the number. Wait, I think I remember it. But anyway, there's a hospital in Chicago that is served out of one of these 1A ESSs, and it's a Centrex.
Mm-hmm.
Which means it's kind of like a PBX,
yep.
But instead of all the switching happening in the PBX, it's all, you can transfer calls and whatnot in the central office itself. And since
right.
this is an electronically controlled analogs, relay-based system, you can hear the switching noises. And what we can do is I can give you the number and we can do some of those over the air.
I
can't pass that stone.
I cannot do it with this. I would be very, at this point, with one phone line available to me here, I don't want to take the chance of dropping, even though I could three-way it. I would I would be a little tenuous on that at this point.
Well, I can actually do it from here. I can call on one of my other lines and three-way.
Okay.
So let me go ahead and do that. Hang
okay,
on
that sounds good.
A live phone trip.
Yeah, there we go. These things have always fascinated me.
Yep.
He was talking about a hospital in Chicago. I'm guessing that that institution that we used to call IVHI and the institute that's now Icry Wood also had a Centrex, and I think it was set up the same way. The weirdest thing about those things is to realize that they must have to run all the wiring for every single line and do home runs back to the central office.
Yep, in most cases they would.
Yep.
So I mean, here they've got this huge wad of phone wire. I mean, it seems to me that Centrex is a cure for which there should have never been a disease.
Well, the biggest advantage is that the phone company had control of everything. You, as a company, didn't have to do any of that
right,
stuff
for all
or
practical
learn
purposes,
it.
What you had was a small-town
phone system.
Because it was like five digits or four digits, depending on how big the Centrex was.
Right. Well, I mean, the real reason that the phone companies started pushing Centrex was because after the divestiture, they weren't allowed to sell any sort of PBX or key system equipment.
Oh, so they couldn't sell it, therefore they didn't want you to have a Merlin.
The phone companies didn't want you to have a Merlin, you could actually, if you had a Merlin, Centrex could work with that because that was just a bunch of analog CO lines.
Mm-hmm.
What they couldn't sell you was like a Northern Telecom Meridian or something
Okay.
They could sell you a Centrex as an alternative to that. And also the advantage of that is that, if you have a bunch of widely distributed stations, you can still have, five-digit dialing between them.
Mm-hmm. In fact, they could be all across the state as long as it was the same phone company.
Right.
They could have tie lines going from Chicago to Springfield and mm-hmm. Wherever. And that, in fact, did happen.
Right. The state actually had a fairly elaborate bunch of phone systems tied together for their various state institutions, including the universities and...
Well, the university actually had their own separate... As far as I know, they were not directly tied with the other state things, although they may have had a connection somehow.
I think there
somehow.
Were some connections.
Yeah, typically universities have their own PBXs. Well, let me go ahead and send three-way into the hospital. I don't think I can touch-tone at the hospital and at the same time not have the touchstones affect the conference we're talking on.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think I'll do is I can probably just wait on the line for an operator to come around and then ask for some department.
Okay.
And you'll hear the switching noises. So let me go ahead and get that on the line. Let me three-way. Hang on.
Okay. And he goes to three-way.
Yep.
Thank you for calling Loretto Hospital. If you are calling from a touch-tone phone and know your party's extension, you may dial the pound sign and then the extension now, or at any time during this message. For the emergency department, press 1. For patient information, press 2. For outpatient clinics, press 3. For a listing of other hospital services, press 4. To listen to this message again, press 8. If you need operator assistance, please remain on the line and an operator will be with you shortly.
That voice sounds familiar.
Please wait for assistance.
Ooh. Good chunk.
Hi, radiology, please.
Radiology.
Oh, sorry, I got you by mistake. And that's the hospital.
I've
heard that kerchunk before.
Oh, yeah, that's fairly famous.
Yeah, those.
And what does that signify?
Hang on, let me go back to my VoIP phone. Hold on.
Sure.
Okay, what that signifies, basically, the one ESS is there's little read relays that connect your call. So, but they're all under computer control. It's not like a crossbar where everything's all electromechanical. But what basically the relays have to, you know, close and open and connect and disconnect in order to connect your call to whatever various line you need to be connected to. So, like, for example, you call into the Centrix, and then the recording picks up. And usually when you just dial someone on a 1ESS, all you'll hear is, like, kind of a chip as they pick up the line and the relay closes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but, like, in this case, you connect to the recording, and then the recording has to tell the switch to connect you to the operator.
I noticed that. It kerchunked when it dialed the operator, it kerchunked when she picked up, and then it kerchunked when she tried to transfer you to radiology. It was like kerchunking every time something happened.
And that's another thing.
With
a number one ESS, call waiting will do that, too.
Yep. That's probably where you would have heard that sound very commonly.
Yes, the person listening to the person calling in, if you are talking to someone and you get a call waiting, the other person on your phone, you know, on that conversation will just hear a kerchunk. They will not hear the beep that you hear as the person getting the call waiting. Whereas with the digital call waitings, all they hear is a tiny little burst of silence where it's a minuscule missing background noise.
Mm-hmm.
And but this is this was the first the number one ESS, I guess, makes sense. It's number one. It was the first system that where any of these electronic extracurricular things could be added. You couldn't have those on crossbar or anything before that.
Oh yeah.
And in fact, touch tone is another thing, because they used to charge extra for touch tone. And prior to number 5 crossbar, they actually had to put a physical converter in there to...
Yeah, kind of a little register sender thing.
Right, that would change to... that would turn the touch tones back into pulses and let the thing dial.
Yeah, so it didn't do you any good to use touch tone, because the call would go through just as slowly anyway.
That's right.
But at least your fingers could get off the dial faster.
Right, the only... And in fact, in some cases, it slowed you down, because I know... some of these pulse dialers could actually dial at 20 pulses per second, whereas I think the standard telephone dial and the ones that were done by these relay, the converters were only 10 pulses.
The converters would actually sometimes, like the number one crossbar actually had, there were a few of them with real, you know, DTMF.
Uh-huh.
But the register senders in many cases would convert, like on crossbars, there were some that would convert your touch tones to fast pulsing,
mm-hmm.
like 20 pulse per second dial pulsing. So there was sort of an advantage to having the touch tone, but not a huge advantage.
Right.
Especially when into a step switch, though. The step switches just can't tolerate anything more than 10.
So right. So, like, on a step, you would hear the, you would dial, and then you'd hear, you know, just...
Yep.
If you were dialing rotary.
That's correct.
A lot of times...
And it,
well, in fact, when we first moved to Macomb, I think, we used to hear the... it used to do a lot of conversion to pulses as you would after you'd dial.
Yep. After you touch tone. Well, in the early days, before they put in the before they put in the digital switch switches, the you would get you depending on what you were what it was using, you would hear you would either hear the kerchunking of it while it was while it was pulsing, or in some cases, I guess like you say, the number five crossbar actually was able to do it with DTMF. And so it didn't do that. But in the old days, they actually charged you extra to have touch tone.
Right.
And they would disable the ability of you to use touch tone if you had an ESS. And you told them you didn't want touch tone. It would not accept the touch tone signals. And you couldn't dial with it. Now, in the case of number five crossbar, you got it, no matter what. You could tell them you didn't want a touch tone, and they would not charge you for it. But if you had a touch tone phone, it would still work.
Right.
Whereas with the number one crossbar, they literally had to put a physical device in at for your line to make your phone, your touch tone phone work.
Well, it's not actually personally for you, but they would have touch tone markers versus non touch tone ones, and they would just have to put you on a group.
Ah, okay.
Each one of the common touch tone things. It wouldn't be a personal.
Basically, they didn't have enough to go.
With step, it would be a personal thing sometimes for on your line, but.
Right, they didn't have enough to go around, is what it boils down to. So they didn't give everybody on the number one crossbar a touch tone connection, in effect.
I have a funny story about it. I asked the business office rep, probably in San Francisco once, why they charged extra for touch tone at a time when all switches would take touch tone anyway, so that there was really no excuse for it.
Mm-hmm.
And her answer was that when you have a dial phone, as probably everybody knows, when you turn the dial phone to the right, nothing happens. It's when you let it go and it goes back to the left that the pulses actually happen.
Yep.
Right.
So she knew that. So she told me that. But she claimed that on a dial phone, my finger was adding power to the system. My finger by working it to the right
would then
power it. Whereas touch tones, your finger moves only a fraction of an inch, so it can't add enough power. So you need special power generators to handle touch tones, and that's why they charge extra for it.
Oh jeez, what a story!
Oh my God.
That one's amazing. Did she make that up herself?
I guess so. I don't know.
Probably.
I wonder if she stayed up all night thinking of that one. Oh, my God.
That's great.
Oh, I love that.
Sometimes you do have incredibly crazy stories to explain silly things.
Yeah. I could be wrong. Am I right? Okay, you were talking about how you needed, when touchtone came around, that you needed a converter to convert touchtones to pulse. Am I correct that nowadays it's the reverse? If you have a complete... digital system, and someone still has a pulse phone, that they got to convert the pulses to something else?
No, it can take it. Yeah, usually the equipment that listens to the touch tones will also listen for dial pulse. It's just kind of a standard to always have dial pulse built into everything.
Okay.
And in fact, most of the time these days, it's a computer switch. They, they computer, or at least it, until a couple of years ago when they made it universal for touch tone, they would... flag your line one way or the other with a computer to make it accept or not accept touch tone.
Right. If they decided that you weren't paying for it and you weren't supposed to get it, it would just simply ignore it. It wasn't because.
Nowadays, I think it's pretty much just every. It's just kind of included most places. I guess.
Yes,
right?
I think it's pretty much universal now.
For a long time, I had this problem where we basically said, well, we don't want it. So then they in effect turned it on. And I think at the time they were, charging us? I'm trying to remember exactly how it worked. Anyway, they turned it off. And, no, they
no, no, they, first...
no, they turned it on. But
it was really weird.
Somehow they charged. Here's
let me. Okay, I think I can go through it, yeah. Do this. We came to we moved into town. We told them we didn't want Touchstone. They said okay, and they were gonna and they didn't turn it off. So we, even though we told them we didn't want Touchstone, because I really didn't care at that point. It was one of those things that, you know, they were charging me like $3 a month extra for it or something. I can use Dial Pulse. I don't really need to have it that much faster. And obviously it still worked on banking things, because obviously if you had a, you know, if you had a Touchstone.
Phone over and...
But in any case, so they actually left it on. And a few years later, there was a... They came up with the thing where they weren't charging extra for it anymore, and they switched it off. Basically, they reversed in effect, anybody that hadn't been paying for Touchstone, they would have switched it on. Well, we weren't paying for it, but we didn't get it, but we were getting it. And instead of switching it on at that point, they switched it off. And we had the hardest time trying to tell them, no, you don't understand. I know it doesn't cost anymore, but I'm not getting it. I want it now, and I'm still not getting it. You turned it off. It was really weird.
Yep.
I finally had to go to a supervisor, or a supervisor, and explain the whole thing to them.
I have an idea. What if we have people start asking us questions from outside the show, and then we start talking about those?
That would be a very good idea. Dwayne, I wonder if I could get you to come in here and take a quick look at the IRC, because at this point I'm not really able to be close to that thing
without causing
a mammoth hum.
Yeah, I suppose
I'll
take it by.
I'm on the IRC channel right now. I can feel
it. Okay, if you see something that's coming up, that'd be fine too. Sure.
Yeah, okay, so... people on the IRC channel, if you're listening, go ahead and pop the question, and I'll
absolutely
read
this
it off.
This will be.
I thought Byron was in there with you.
Byron has disappeared. I don't know where he went. Maybe he went to lie down. He was not feeling very well. He was having some stomach ache earlier, and said he would like to not talk much.
Yep.
So I think if he's out of the room, it's much more easy.
I thought he was in there because I was downstairs eating. I must have missed him.
Okay.
That's when I found out, when I confirmed the blender story. in the kitchen.
Yeah.
I've got a question. I remember my experience in doinking with the telephone system is started very late, and I didn't really get much exposure. But I did find around dialing various numbers, I'd get things like... special operators and internal operators and things like that. What exactly are those? I mean, I remember getting one that was they'd answer was, you know, special operator, you know, and they'd never tell me what they were for.
Well, typically there were several types of special operator. One of them was, you know, say you dialed the wrong number, right, and the phone company you were using had some sort of centralized automatic intercept system, but not entirely automatic, right? It was just sort of semi-automatic. Or the switch you were using didn't have the capability to identify the number you had dialed. So what you would get is you'd come into the system, and then you'd have an operator come on and ask you what number you dialed. And so you would tell, 555-2368. And so they key that into the system and then patch you into the recording. And so if you dialed 555-2368 and it was a non-working number, right, you'd get a recording like, the number you have reached, 555-2368, is not in service. Or it would tell you that the number had been changed or whatnot. But
right.
If you dialed a the reason they had that operator, and what they would do is if you dialed a working number that was disconnected, and so, you know, this was much preferable just giving you a disconnected number recording with no number in it, because what would happen is you would get a message saying, the number you have dialed, 555-2368, is a working number. Will you dial it again, please? Or something along those lines.
Wow.
And then there were special operators for... For example, if you, like, say you were dialing and the switch you were using, you were dialing a toll call, and the switch you were using supported direct distance dialing, but didn't necessarily have the ability to tell the system what number you were calling from.
Yep.
What would happen in that case would be that a special operator would come up the line and ask what number you were calling from, so she could key it in for the billing system.
Yep.
Exactly.
And, well, in a way, verifying that, couldn't you just give them any other number?
Yes. You could, but nobody usually did that.
People were very honest.
Most people just thought, well, she already really knows it and just is asking for verification. You know, they didn't think about the fact that she obviously needed the number because she didn't know it.
Why would she ask for it if she knew it?
Hi, I'm from AOL, and I need your credit card number.
They would know what prefix, at least, you were in.
Yes.
Sometimes they would know if you're lying too badly, but...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's true. If you were going to do it, you had to at least, and it would probably be a good idea not to say 99 so and so, whatever it was, because payphones tended to be
98.
I remember dialing. I remember deciding to dial the whole 9,000 series of numbers from 9,000 on, and I remember one time coming across a number that was just a tone.
Yep.
Yep.
And I every so often I would just dial it and it would get a tone. One day. I dialed it, got the tone, okay, it's still the tone, hung up. The phone rang back immediately, and someone said, would you stop calling this number? Scared the hell out of me.
Yeah, he probably found either a loop or some sort of test number.
In the Chicago area, the 9XXX tended to be test numbers.
And Northwest Indiana was a very similar system.
Yes, it was.
Or phone... system numbers. They were within the telephone system that you were dialing, you know, basically.
They were external numbers to link to internal type things.
Yep, exactly.
And in many cases, they were, for instance, that tone was probably a loop around, and if someone else had called the number just above that, that in some cases, depending on whether it was filtered or not, the tone would disappear, and you would actually be able to talk to the other person.
Yeah, that's the way the loop around works. The stop dialing this number reminds me of an Evan Doorbell story that he told me once. If you listen to the salute to your local operator, this is where part of this recording comes from. There was some disconnected number. It was probably like 333-3333 or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what they did, and they just dialed 333-333-333-333-333-333 and they got intercept.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the way the intercept worked was they could tell what number you dialed sometimes, because on this particular board there were Nixie tubes that would show what number you dialed, so the thing would light up, you know, 333-333-333.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept dialing this over and over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually the operator said, and they made a recording of it, she said, "Don't you have something else to do besides dial that number?"
Well, another one that happened like that was 765-4321. Because people would call it and say, "Blast off!"
Well, in the reverse order, I kind of, when I was young, I made a long-distance call from Lowell to South Bend.
Oops.
Because 234 was one of the South Bend, Indiana exchanges. So 2345678. So if you dial 1 2 3 4 5 6, you made a long distance call from Lowell to South Bend, Indiana.
That would have been a fun number to have, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
That would have been pretty cool.
If you'd done that in the Chicago area, you would have been calling somewhere in Lake Forest. you know, without doing the area code. And that was another thing in the
apparently,
old. Go ahead.
Apparently, CBS's main number in New York City for many years was 765-4321.
Mm-hmm.
I think I heard something about that.
But not now, of course.
And the Channel 7, the ABC, was 777-777-777.
Right.
Well, San Francisco, particularly, that's a Chronicle News newspaper.
Particularly silly is here in Las Vegas, the one of the local news stations has, I think, 876-5309.
Yipe. That's so close.
That's very close.
It is.
Is Jenny there?
Start singing.
Is Jenny there?
The Chicago Tribune apparently was 222-2222.
Still is. In fact, the Tribune Corporation has that entire exchange, if I remember right.
And
that
was 222 prefix.
That was
sometimes
the, I was mentioning earlier, that was one of the few numbers I could actually get through the switch hook when I would dial it around, you know,
and the one,
in the early 70s.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that sometimes was 222-1000 at the time, or 1111. Basically, the one of the newspapers was one of those, and the other one was the other. Maybe it was 221.
I was going to say 222 is sometimes, and I think they had the whole thing because you could direct, if you knew it, you could direct dial various departments with different stations.
Yes, exactly.
Plus, they had for a while they had some various numbers that you could call that would, you know, give you like weather and horoscopes and all kinds of different things.
It was kind of funny because about 1970-ish or so, when I was doing some of that dialing from that payphone, I could get inward at Rockford, but I didn't know what it was, so I never thought to ask for a phone number.
She'd just say, inward, Rockford.
Inward. Yep. Yeah, that would answer inward.
Yep.
I have a question in the IRC channel.
Okay.
Someone wants to know, you know, in the let me read this word for word. In the old days, you know, you would ask, you would either ask the operator or you would dial it directly. You would ask, you know, have a number with like, you know, Mulberry 52368.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And he wants to know what that is. So basically, the way it works is that exchanges were originally named. You would have,
a lot of times,
like
they
for
were
example,
streets.
Well, they would be where the, that would be the name of the central office.
Right. Yeah, the name of the central office itself. For example, Concord, California was Mulberry. For example, today, Concord is now in the 925 area, but in those days it was 415.
Mm-hmm.
And Mulberry, let's see, Mulberry 2, 3, 5, and 7, I believe, were the original Concord prefixes.
And the interesting
when it was Mulberry.
And the interesting thing about those was that before dialing, you would just say, you know, you'd ask your operator to get me Mulberry 3456 or whatever.
Right.
And she would put the call through by plugging it into her switchboard and connecting to the Mulberry exchange.
Right.
And an exchange was like a central office.
Right.
And
she would get the Mulberry operator and ask her for 3456. And then
right.
Mulberry operator would plug it into 3456 and connect your call.
Exactly.
And when they transitioned to dial exchanges, the way that worked was the first two, sometimes the first three letters. I know in Chicago, I think, I'm not sure about
yes,
this,
but Dearborn,
Chicago tended to have three letter.
Dearborn 2 was DE2. Or it changed, actually, as time went by.
It
because
was three letters, four numbers, then changed to two letter, five numbers.
Exactly. And the reason they changed it was because they would have Dearborn, you know, they would have more.
They'd get more numbers.
More
right?
numbers in yeah. the exchange, so
yeah,
they'd have
they
to have.
They were running out of numbers.
They were running out of numbers, so they had to, instead of having Dearborn, you know, DE, they would have to have DE2, DE3, DE4.
There's one
you
called
know.
Lakeview.
Yes.
Right.
Each of them started out as an exchange, and then they added more numbers to those.
Right.
Wasn't there? Must have been one called Hudson,
yeah,
because
of
yes. Hudson 327.
When you dial those, that's the reason why the rotary phones have the letters on the dial. You would dial, you know, for Mulberry, 685-2368.
Right.
And in fact, today, I think there's the community colleges, Mulberry 51230. You can still dial that.
And I noticed
651230.
I noticed an interesting thing that has started to happen in the last 10, 15, 20 years. A lot of companies will tell you to dial rugs or, you know, dial, pornography or something.
Keys or something.
Yeah, they'll.
I got six letters past the end of the phone number.
Well, yeah. In fact, a lot of times they'll do that. They'll make the thing much longer than it needs to be. Dial the house of ill repute, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, like for example, Sprint Local has, I think, 866 DSL business, which is far too long for an actual phone number.
Yes.
The person at the company has already answered the phone while you're still dialing, you know.
But the old GTE says, see, this is the switch I grew up in GTE territory, it would abort the call. If you did an eighth digit, it would cancel.
Ooh.
The call.
Ooh,
like,
wow. I don't think I've ever
but
run into that.
You couldn't do that back then, but that's the only one I know of.
Honestly,
yeah,
I don't believe I ever had that experience.
Yeah, it was only GTE step with directors that I ever saw that.
Huh. Wow.
Another little hint. Anybody out there who's got those long numbers, I would not recommend necessarily doing them if you've got something like a Vonage.
Yes.
The voice over IP Vonage service is not always happy if you dial those really long numbers, you know, keep going.
Extra numbers.
It doesn't
yeah.
seem
Make
to know
sure
what
you
to
terminate after 10 telephone number digits. Yeah.
I found that out once. It wanted to bill us or something stupid because it just didn't know what to do with the extra numbers.
But another couple of points, though, about the previous phone numbers weren't uniformly seven digits throughout the United States. Some cities had six-digit numbers.
Well, that's true, too.
There would always be a conversion. At one point, when they started getting standardized, Or maybe the particular city just grew to the point that they needed more digits, or maybe they're just joining the standards of the rest of the.
Well,
state.
Yeah,
they would add a digit. There was
right.
A
in fact, in the
how they would add the digits. And everything.
In the GTE exchanges, many of them, you could dial five digits even after they got the even after they added the extra numbers in. If you were still in that town, it was sort of like a giant PBX. You could dial the five digits.
Or in some cases,
right, a lot of step exchanges tend to do that because, mm-hmm. like, you would, if you actually had to have the customer dial all seven digits, that would A, tie up all your equipment, and B, you would often have to have extra selectors in order to have that be possible. So they would actually tell the customers, if you're dialing a number in the exchange, only dial five digits.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And that was true, like, in Jacksonville into the mid 70s.
No, that's not Florida, that's Illinois.
Right. And Kewaunee was that way, too. Which were both GTEs.
Illinois is weird because you get outside of the Chicago area and there's just, I don't know how many phone companies. Well, of course, now they're all merged.
Well, the interesting thing about it was, for the most part, in the large cities like Chicago, Peoria,
Springfield,
East St. Louis, all of those would be owned by Bell Telephone.
Ameritech, SBC, whatever.
But at the time it was Illinois Bell.
Right.
And they got all the big cities. The little towns, the little podunk towns, including some of the far-reaching suburbs, were owned by either Centel or GTE.
In fact, GTE was the bigger one. GTE was the second largest. Basically, Bell, I think, was 85% or 90%.
AT&T was 80% of the market. GTE was 15-ish percent,
right.
I think.
And
the rest of the tiny little ones.
Were the other five. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I knew it was something like that. In any case, so, yeah, exactly. That's and the smaller the town, the more likely it was that the big guys didn't want it.
Exactly. And now...
And, of course, now, I don't know if it's all over, if it's... I'm trying to remember. Is it,
I think we may have lost them again.
Are you guys
no,
still there?
I'm still here.
Okay,
so
it's Christy's line.
It's one of the other lines. There's like four lines in this house. Hello?
Yeah, are you there?
Why did you... They said they were there.
They're there. I didn't do anything. They're still there.
Okay. Anyway, now at least like where we live, it was GTE. It's now Verizon. And I don't know if that's like that all over the country. If anywhere there was...
No, what happened was, the only reason GTE is now Verizon is because Bell Atlantic bought GTE.
Right.
Exactly.
And I believe one of the conditions of the merger was that the word Bell could not appear anywhere in the name. So
yep.
Yeah, follow the merger trail.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to do
that. The thing is,
Verizon sounds more like a brand of sunglasses than a telephone mm-hmm. company. But
one of the things that I sort of noticed about the whole thing in terms of getting GTE and Bell Atlantic buying that, for all practical purposes, they're building up a company as large or pretty close to as large as the original AT&T before the breakup. By the time you put all of these...
And they're starting to merge anyway. You know,
exactly.
Yeah, I know. They're
carrying their own long-distance calls.
Yes.
So. Yeah, it's actually a bigger mess in some ways
they're
than
doing
it was
more,
originally.
They're going back to doing the Bell operating companies, the individual Bell operating companies and the other phone companies as well, are very much doing now what the breakup was designed to stop being done, making
yep.
one big monopoly doing everything.
Well, at least you have competition that keeps the prices low, though.
Yeah. Well, that's true.
Right.
Even when the original breakup took place, there was still an awful lot of friendliness between the various split-up companies. They would, for example, have a common... school for employees to go and learn the various parts of their trades. There were still connections in terms of unions and a lot of other things that really
people were transferred
probably
shouldn't
from one have happened.
People were transferred from AT&T to the local Bell operating companies and vice versa.
When the thing spun off, there were some people that ended up in Lucent or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Yep.
It was very strange.
It's just, realistically, the economies of scale are such that when you have a larger telephone company, it's just more efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, with the advent of lower-priced long-distance that is here today, compared to what we were paying for long-distance calls in the in the 60s and 70s, we're not doing too bad on long distance.
Nope.
Where they're, no, I mean,
where they're getting us is the local
well, I was trying to remember, one of you gentlemen mentioned, oh, you know, these local companies offering long distance. I'm trying to remember, does ours do yet? Does Verizon...
I don't
not
know.
Verizon
do.
Has its own long-distance company.
I know. I know that. Blair, who's one of the listeners, and he also does a show on our network. He lives out in Iowa. He has U.S. West or Quest or
Quest now, yeah.
And they now offer it's
a bundle.
Well, it's one. It's an interesting plan where they will charge you 5 cents a minute for calls, but they have a cap of $20. So if you hit $20 a month in calls, all of a sudden, they're no longer charging you. There's a cap for it.
Basically, anything
becomes
above
unlimited
that
at that point.
Becomes unlimited.
Just kind of
that
interesting.
That, to me, seems kind of weird, because you would think, you know, with the financial shape that Quest is in, that they would want to go for some sort of unlimited plan where it's a flat rate unlimited.
Where they would charge you the basic bottom line,
yeah,
no matter
where
what.
Where they would charge you $25 no matter what. And
well,
then,
I'll tell you what, most places that are offering these are doing that. This is kind of the best of both worlds. If, let's say, there's a month you're not making calls or you're having to be out of town,
whatever,
you're not paying that $20 or $25 or whatever.
Pretty
right,
amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
I thought that was really an ingenious thing, actually.
And nice.
Right. Well, I mean, part of the reason I sound so horrible on this connection is that I'm on a VoIP phone now. Which is, I'm on packet 8, which is fun.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, yes.
We, in fact, Blair has that, or did have
that. Oh, he got rid of it.
I guess he got rid of it, but he had it until then. We're going to get that one of these days, I think, although for some reason it seems like they have dumped their Springfield, Illinois phone numbers, which I wanted to have one because we do a show in Springfield on one of the radio stations.
I didn't see that on the list. I didn't see it on the list. I used to see it on the list of available numbers, and now I don't, so I don't know. I'll have to email them. We currently do at home have Vinaj and Mike add Packet 8. It is pretty neat.
Yep.
Technology.
Yeah, but Vinaj doesn't do San Francisco. That's my problem with it, is that they don't do San Francisco numbers, and I really don't understand why.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it doesn't.
The reasons they give me don't make any sense at all. Although, the last time I asked them, they said that they have the, quote, overlay area code for San Francisco, which is a total lie, because there is no overlay.
Right.
Well, they're from New Jersey. They think overlay codes exist everywhere.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's possible that they ended up with a different area code that would be local to there, that if someone were to dial it, they wouldn't be paying.
Yeah, but the thing is that they use Focal as their underlying long-distance carrier, everyone tells me.
Who?
Based on the prefixes. And Focal does have numbers in San Francisco, so that's why I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't understand
next
that
time
either.
This is going to sound like I'm dropping names. So next time I talk to Jeff Pulver, I'll let him know. We've had him on, and we'll probably have him on again soon. He's a pretty cool guy.
What was particularly funny was at the Consumer Electronics Show when we were at the Vonage booth, and we were talking to them, and Mark was pestering the guy about, you know, how they don't have a San Francisco number, and the guy was looking in the database and looking at all sorts of things. So he turns around to him and goes, "We're sorry."
We're sorry.
But the lady I talked to about exchanging my adapter, she did do it. She did exchange my adapter and everything. But she's the one who told me about the overlay area code. That's what her technical people were telling her. So I said, "Oh, okay. Next time you talk to them, ask them what the 3-digit overlay code is." And I bet they won't be able to come up with one. Then she never answered me again.
Yeah. By the way, do you know how quickly they're going to be changing adapters? Obviously, they're switching from the Cisco to, was it Motorola?
Yeah, I met someone at the CES show who told me to send her an email personally, and she would take care of it. I don't know how easy it is for everybody else, but she took care of it for me easily.
Cool.
Do you find any particular advantage to the new one?
Yes. The Cisco only has one Ethernet port, so if your computer gets really busy at the same time, especially if you're uploading a lot, if your upload part of your DSL line or cable line gets busy, it starts causing missing packets to the other person. It'll sound okay to you, but the other person will start getting some garbling. The Motorola one has two Ethernet ports, so you put it in line ahead of your computer equipment. You plug it directly into the cable modem or the DSL modem,
and then
you plug your other computers into it, and it'll then give priority to its own packets, for its own upload packets, so it tends to work more smoothly.
Interesting.
Yeah. definitely.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to exchange it.
My knowledge of all this stuff is kind of minimal. I'm trying that confuses me because I know it like it had to it has to plug into our router because it basically needs a dynamic.
Right. Well, it is. See, the new one is a router where you can get rid of your existing router.
Okay.
It doesn't have firewalls. It's not very fancy. It doesn't do virtual firewall stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But it can do NAT and it can do DHCP, so you can kind of use it instead of another router.
Cool. Does it do the same thing in terms of talking you through, like getting the IP?
It has a web interface, so it's kind of weird because it has a fixed address in the NAT range is the only address you can talk to its web server through.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a different range of IP addresses you're using, you have to switch a machine over to that range before you
right.
can talk to it and program it anymore. So it's a little bit weird, but basically it works.
I gotta give that Vonage a lot of credit. They keep adding features and
yep.
changing things. I thought it was really neat. I noticed one of the latest changes that I've noticed, it may have been there for a while, is they used to have two bandwidth settings, 90 and 30, and now they've added 50. They've added one in the middle.
Right.
So it'd be kind of interesting. There's just a lot of neat. Obviously, that's a whole other show in technology dealing with voice over IP, but, yeah, that is a cool thing.
Definitely.
And then the other thing is that their adapters have always had a second phone port
yes.
that wasn't used. But nowadays, for, I think, $10 a month,
yep.
they'll give you a second phone number that they consider to be a fax number.
Well, they've got,
but in reality,
actually,
it doesn't restrict it. You can do anything with it.
Actually, if you look at it closely, they have about three or four different ways you can add numbers. One is a virtual number for $5 a month that doesn't include any calling capability, but, you can have an incoming number. Then I think for $10 a month or something, there's that, and then there may be one that's a little bit more expensive that includes
another set of long.
Well, it includes like 500 minutes or something like that, so you could have like another phone.
That's 15 nowadays. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's like three different ways. I thought that was kind of cute.
Mm-hmm. And I guess there are other people who have managed to, in effect, use that for other services.
The Cisco device or whatever
is obviously somewhat universal.
Perfectly universal and could be used for other voice over IP applications.
Yeah, you can figure out how to get into it because they password protect it and they don't give you the password.
Right, on their copies, that's true, but you could buy one from someone else.
Sure.
It would be very interesting.
Have we had any other questions in the IRC?
I'm trying to find questions from the channel.
Uh-huh.
If you're listening to your channel, please ask me more questions.
Absolutely.
Well, let me go back to something I was going to say about 5 minutes ago. We were talking about the named prefixes.
Mm-hmm.
The reason they really dropped them is it used to be that you could always tell the difference between a prefix and an area code. Because an area code would always have a 1 or a 0 in the middle.
In the center, yes.
And a prefix would never have a 1 or a 0
mm-hmm.
in the center.
And
the reason for that is that the phone company equipment could tell whether you're dialing an area code or a prefix just by looking at the format of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that stayed in existence for about 15 or 20 years after the advent of what they called all-digit dialing, which caused an uproar in the early 60s and had several songs about it.
The other reason that they went to that they claimed, at least at the time, that they went to all-digit dialing was because you would have, let's say you had Murray Hill 6, Murray Hill 7, you'd end up with Murray Hill this and Murray Hill that. Well, they were getting to the point where they couldn't spell things anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
So you'd end up...
You can't really spell anything XF.
Right, yep. Exactly. So they just ran out of names and decided, well, if we're going to do this, we're going to just kill it all together and have, And the other thing, of course, was there were no letters on the number one. So the first thing that was happening was you'd have 631 and 630. And
there was another
disaster.
That was
disaster. Never part of the name anyway. You like, for example, you'd have Mulberry 1 or Mulberry 0.
But those were later.
One of the reasons why they get rid of three letters of the prefix instead of went to two letters.
Exactly.
Of the name.
Right, exactly. Mulberry could still be Mulberry, and you could have, blah, blah, one, whatever it was.
And then wasn't it, I don't know who tried to do this, but there were some people, or maybe, I don't know, but there was like this afoot to let's add like Q and Z to the one key or something?
Well, the stupid, that would be totally stupid.
I don't know what that was all about. Because I had some phones that had that and others that didn't.
Q should be added to the 7, I think, and Z would be added to the...
To the 9. Let you use the 1 and the 0, to have a way to use the 1 and the 0 but still have letters.
Mm-hmm. And as you said...
But anyway, so once area codes, when they start running out of numbers, and they start running out of area codes, they let area codes have other digits besides 1 and 0.
In the center.
And prefixes started allowing prefixes to have 1 and 0, so that kind of killed the need.
Right.
That happened. Well, they started allowing area codes to have anything besides 1 and 0 around about 1995.
Yep.
And I know Los Angeles did prefixes that could also be area codes as early as the 70s, but
yep.
Everywhere else I think that tended to happen around 1990.
Right.
Well,
Chicago
did it in the mid-80s, early 80s, because I remember about 83 or 84 we started running across one. In fact, a friend of ours had one.
630 was an area code,
also a prefix,
and very right. And obviously, there's an 847 area code now, and that was nothing but a prefix. I mean, obviously, any of these things are area codes and prefixes have no meaning.
There was
anymore.
I'm trying to remember what it was, but there was one that was like a 61 something that was up by Hostalis's place.
Yeah, up on the north.
Yep.
Into Chicago.
So that it was definitely an area code type prefix.
Most of that didn't happen until they got rid of all of the they were having trouble doing that in anything except in an electronic exchange or a digital exchange.
Another thing,
Charlie's cell phone is 719 is the prefix for that.
Yep. So. Another weird thing was Chicago for a long time did not make you dial a 1. You could
when you dialed long distance. That was
That's
because
right.
Chicago, that was used for cities that tended to have a lot of number 1 crossbar in them,
mm-hmm.
because and number 5 crossbar as well. Because what would happen is the way crossbar worked is you would dial the whole number, then it would analyze that number and then put the call through.
Yep.
So because of the format of the area code, you didn't need to dial a 1. If you were on a step, for example, you would have to dial a 1 to get into the toll trunks.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were on a crossbar, you would just dial, 415-555-2368. And then you'd be connected.
Right.
And, of course, in the early days, the other thing Chicago had, and I assume a lot of other cities, was a separate number for long-distance operator versus the regular operator.
Right. If you wanted to dial long-distance and actually, if you dialed 0, you got a...
Local.
You got an at that time, an Illinois Bell operator that couldn't do long-distance calls.
Mm-hmm.
She could, she could take care of your things locally. But
back at the Bell system?
Yes.
Yep.
If you wanted to get long distance, you literally dialed 211 to get long distance.
Interesting.
And that lasted for a long time.
Yeah, the other thing
question.
Is there's a whole story about. Go ahead.
We have a question in the channel. Someone wants to know. Dave in Virginia wants to know, what is the area code 700 used for?
That is primarily.
That is
conference calls. A lot of it's conference calls, and I guess that's pretty much.
Well, it was also that move.
But conceptually, that's an area code owned by a particular carrier. Each carrier can do what they want with duplicate numbers, I think. But
yes, that's right.
For example, when you dial from your home phone 1-700-555-4141, that is the same number regardless where you dial it. But depending on which long distance carrier you have, you'll be patched in to the various companies recording.
Yep.
For example, what I can do on my other phone, and I'll dial in and I'll demonstrate this, is that when you dial a long-distance company's carrier code,
yep.
and then the 700-555-4141, then you actually get the recording as if you dialed that from being pre-subscribed to that company. Let me demonstrate this.
Yeah,
Hold on.
That's pretty cool. I've done that.
Yes. And depending on where you...
carriers don't do anything with it, but they could if they wanted to. Carriers could do special... AT&T was for a while. AT&T was giving out 700 phone numbers for a while.
Yes, and 500
you
phone numbers.
You had to have AT&T call through AT&T to use
yep.
them.
Right.
And for several years, we had a 500 number from them.
Which was very much like the 700 number, except it was not restricted. And you could take it anywhere, and anybody that called it, the call would get forwarded to whatever phone number you gave it.
Yeah, I had one of those. I forget that one was 700 or 500, but I did have one of those for a while, yeah.
For example, okay, I can't demonstrate on the VoIP phone. Let me demonstrate dialing 700-555-4141 normally.
This will be interesting.
Yep. Yeah, those 500 were neat.
Were.
16-8. Thank you for making Global Crossing your long-distance company. You may now place dial 1 calls on our network.
Sorry about the quality, the loud volume of that recording.
Yeah, very loud.
That's
yeah.
nice and that you may now place calls. That's nice of that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Let me. So, for example, if I dial 10-10-288...
You'd get
plus,
AT&T.
Plus, yeah, let me demonstrate that.
Just a soft click, no big kerchunk.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for choosing AT&T for your long-distance calling.
You're welcome.
How much they pay her to sit there and say that every time someone calls?
Yeah.
Thank you for using AT&T.
Yep. I've always used that method to keep track of
whether or not
whether somebody
slammed
you, or you know if there were any other problems where something you weren't no longer connected to the line you were supposed to be.
Yeah.
And to check other places, like if somebody said they were connected to such and such a service, a lot of times they didn't know if they really ever got connected or not. So
well, the other interesting thing is that there are an awful lot of resellers. And you'll go, you know, you'll say, well, I'm with Podunk Pinkly Poo Telephone Company with my long distance, and they give me real good rates, and you dial that number, and you find they're really being serviced by MCI.
I noticed that a lot of those, no-name type companies ended up using MCI's lines.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, I actually had what surprised me was I had a no-name company that was MCI, and then for whatever reason they switched to AT&T.
Uh-huh.
It really surprised the heck out of me because AT&T is traditionally always very expensive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although now I'm with some no-name company and they're Global Crossing.
Yeah, right, an unknown.
Yeah, I say I heard of
them.
Yeah,
I think they went away, didn't they?
Oh, they were still there.
I'm on Global Crossing.
Yeah.
I just got through hearing them.
I know, I heard that. I was just being...
Yeah.
But they seem to have a little problem with their financial... system.
So does MCI. So.
Yeah, that's true.
But Phonage uses Global Crossing for some things too. Actually.
Oh, they do. What happens if you dial?
That's what Evan Dorval told me. I'm not sure.
I wonder what happens if you dial the 700 thing through Phonage. I've never thought to do that.
I think it just timed out to a reorder. I tried that. I think when I got my Packet 8 service.
Okay.
And all it did was it gave me an error signal.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And by the way, it would be wise not to use Directory Assistance on Phonage. Or any of these other ones, because they charge you for
the
those.
Nose.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why you have a telephone directory.
That's right.
Yeah. Or if you're visually impaired, you get exemption, which is still around, which is pretty incredible, because there's almost no reason for it to be.
Considering that there's stuff on the web, you can do it now, too. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
It was interesting.
I think I probably am going to have to... You know, I've got a little bit of time. I was thinking, gosh, it's getting close to the top of the hour, but we've got a little time.
I was going to say, I don't think it is. Yeah.
No, it isn't.
Yep. A couple things I remembered from I was going to mention earlier. When I was really young, I think it was in the late 70s. I think it might have been early 70s. I was able to, where I lived, if I just dialed, I believe it was 2323, and hung up, the phone would ring. And then later, in the late 80s and early 90s, I found the same feature, only this time I had to dial 571 in the last four.
Mm-hmm.
Is any of that kind of stuff still around? I don't
Oh, yeah, very much. There's ringback circuits I know of in Pacific Bell territory, and you can't do it on the switch I'm served out of, but here in Las Vegas, Sprint Centel, that has or had a feature called Call Within, where you would basically dial your own phone number and hang up and it would ring it back.
That's
right.
What happens with us. In fact, we can still do that, and if you pick it up, you can use it as an intercom, which is what they claim they designed that for.
Right. Well, it's really just kind of the party line ringback circuit.
Exactly.
That they're reselling as, use it as an intercom.
Right.
That's why they call it Call Within, because you could...
You can call from within your house or something.
Call from within your house.
Yeah.
Sorry, my mind just spaced on me there for a second.
In the case of in the early days of the thing, they were doing it with, like you said, for party line situations, and they would also do it if you wanted to ring an basically if you wanted an extension to ring, you know, you would they would give you that information. They were kind of stingy with it shortly after they went to electronic switching, and you had to kind of find it for yourself.
Yeah, but actually the party line ones are different though, because if you just, you know, party lines in a lot of parts of the country, like there would be like 10 parties on a party line.
That's correct.
Where it would often have different patterns of ringing.
Right,
so
two rings.
Just a simple ring back thing, just to make a ring in one pattern, is not going to alert your other party.
That's right.
That's true.
But they sometimes did have special numbers where you would dial a certain prefix to get to that machine. Then you dial a digit from 1 through 0 for which party you wanted to ring, and then would ring back the proper party. And stuff.
In some cases, on a two-party line, they used to use
one of the other wires.
They would ground side.
Yeah, it was the ground wire. Yeah.
Yes. And it would either ring across the talk circuit or ring from one side to the ground. They could actually do three lines that way, because they could do the red wire, red and yellow, green and yellow, or red and green.
But with more than
green.
That, they start having to do patterns of ringing.
Yes, that's true.
And then actually that brings up another point, is that how would they bill party line calls? Because they did have automatic direct assist dialing that would work with party lines.
That's a good question.
Although those totally trivial to cheat on.
Yeah.
But they would do it in two different ways. If it was only a two-party line system, one phone would just be an ordinary phone, and the other party's phone would have a little resistance in the ground or something, and they would watch for that resistance is how it would tell that it was that party for billing purposes.
They also had...
Ten party line systems would have something in the dial that as each dial for each party was rigged separately, that as the dial went back, you would have a prefix. Like in order to dial a long distance call, you'd have to dial like 110. You have to dial something that had a 0 in it as a prefix before you would dial the area code. And that 0, as your dial was turning back, each party's dial would put a little pulse of ground only at the right place. So one party would do a pulse of ground just doing the fifth pulse of the 0. Another one would have it as the third pulse of the 0. So the machine would pick up which party you were for billing purposes from that.
That's fascinating. I never knew that.
Yeah.
One of the things I remember that was really weird is the Sony...
I'll be back in a minute.
Pretty close to ID time, but so maybe you stick around till then. One of the things that the Sony 105 tape recorders that were made in the early 70s, late 60s, their impedance was about 500 ohms, which if you plugged it directly into a phone line, would if you dialed the phone number, it would, as I recall, I think it would pick up the call automatically. However, it didn't hang up on it. At the end of the caller hung up,
it's supervised, but it was just a high enough impedance that if the party you were talking to hung up, it would drop the line in, and it would still answer the call again if somebody else called you. It was a very weird, and it was also balanced so that it was off, it was not grounded, so it you didn't have to have any transformer or anything else on there to you could just connect it directly into the input of that recorder. So you could actually have used that as an answering machine if you could have figured a way to actually start the thing as the call came in.
Yep. In fact, we used to put a variable
relay
resistor in series with a line just to see what it would do, and there were various things the way it would answer. Sometimes it would pick up the call automatically after a couple of rings and drop it at the end of the call. Other times, different various amounts of resistance would keep the thing on hold, in effect on hold.
On hook, yeah.
On hook or whatever.
Off hook or whatever.
But, I mean, you could get different, depending on what level of resistance you introduced into it, it would act different ways. Like you said, some of which would be available to operate a recorder. We once took a reel-to-reel machine that was solenoid-operated and set it up so that it would pick up the call, start the recorder, and then drop it at the end of the call when the caller hung up.
Well, I am going to run the IDs now, and we'll be right back.
The search for extraterrestrial intelligence, also known as SETI, is not the only group sending signals into outer space. We too are hoping there's life on other planets. From the internet to space, the universe, and beyond, this is the Wookiee Satellite Radio Network, AMC 7, Transponder 5, 7.5 Wideband Audio. Brought to you by Superstar Netlink Turner Vision. Their number is 1-800-395-9557.
For the best in talk, tunes, and more, this is RFD.
Hello, everybody out there in Internet Radio Land. This is your football buddy saying you're listening to Gator Radio. Oh, Nelly.
One way trip is not. There are a little bit, sir.
You don't want to pull that on me because I'll shoot you.
Now, what was that all about?
WTMV LE Macomb.
And I think we're done.
We're back.
We're back.
Yes. And this is Tech This for, February 6th,
2004.
Yep. And we're into hour three.
And we're talking with several people here.
I forget their names. I'm sorry. What's your names again?
Mark Bernay, is there, right?
Yes.
And who else?
Strom Carlson.
Oh, okay. That's right. Which, of course, is a play on the old company Stromberg Carlson.
Exactly. One of my favorite phones that I have is a, well, it's really sort of a hodgepodge. It's actually an ITT trimline type phone. It's a little rotary, but it's for whatever reason, United Telephone of Kansas decided to put a Stromberg Carlson name thingy on the phone. So it appears to be a Stromberg Carlson phone, but it's an ITT. But the thing I like about it, it's made from the early 70s, mm-hmm. and it's this horrifyingly nuclear orange color.
Oh, wow. That's got to be different. I've never seen one orange like that. But, you know, certainly the old Centel, we were talking about them earlier, they always bought Stromberg Carlson stuff. And at one point, we ended up buying a phone from, I don't know, is Graybar still around? I don't suppose.
Oh, yeah, I buy things from Graybar all the time.
Graybar's okay. Anyway, we bought a Kellogg phone from them.
Like Snap, Crackle, Pop? Oh.
Yeah.
Now, when you say Graybar, do you mean Graybar Electric?
Yep.
Yeah, that, I think they're still here in Chicago.
They used to be.
Yeah, I think they still are. It's a pretty famous name. I remember that.
Yep. Well, they were one of the competitors, in effect, that claimed that Gray had created the phone, and they took a patent dispute to get settled, and they, you know, kind of did some arrangements, and it at least kept them in the business a little bit, not as a complete competitor, but they got to at least do stuff. So, I heard some typing. Any other interesting things?
Oh, they're just talking about the GTE merger in the channel.
Ah, okay.
They're trying to figure out the structure of Verizon and what happened. And basically, I guess I'll explain that now because I can't type quite fast enough. Mm-hmm. Basically, the structure of Verizon is such, Bell Atlantic bought General Telephone and Electronics, which became Verizon. And now, what also happened in that time was that Verizon partnered with a company called Vodafone, and Vodafone owns a stake in an extraordinarily large number of small mobile phone companies. AirTouch was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I know they owned here in Vegas. They had Alltel Cellular, which was at one point going back. Was 360 Cellular, which was divested from Sprint, which was the old Sprint Cellular before they started Sprint PCS, which was Centel Cellular before Sprint bought Centel. But anyway, going back to what happened was AirTouch tended to own all the original little analog that became converted to digital mobile phone companies, which became divested as the big phone companies wanted to invest in more advanced digital networks.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened was, and someone's saying they never heard of AirTouch. AirTouch was, from what I remember, the original Pacific Telesis Mobile Services that was divested from Pactel to become AirTouch in the early 90s before they went to a GSM system. But what happened was basically Verizon partnered with Vodafone and to create a new company called Verizon Wireless. Verizon owns 55% of it. Vodafone owns 45%.
Mm-hmm. That's the one I actually hadn't heard of, was this Vodafone company. That kind of surprises me a little, but I had heard of AirTouch.
Yeah. Vodafone is based out of England, I believe.
Aha.
They own either, you know, large stakes of companies in all around the world, or they own the entire company. For example, they in South Africa, they own, I think, half or something resembling half of Vodacom, which is the major South African telephone company, and the South African wireline company owns the other portion of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that seems to be Vodafone's business, is partnering with these existing companies to create mobile phone companies for them.
It was sort of interesting, too, that there was, this goes back many years, that AT&T was kind of the international
service.
And they also, for some reason, I had found a radio from the early 60s made by AT&T.
Interesting. Well, yeah, like, for example, there was a switch, which was called the AT&T Pentaconta. And I was doing some research into this, and everyone, you know, from the United States I talked to says it was an AT&T. But then I discovered that the Pentaconta was actually manufactured and designed by Alcatel of France.
Ah.
And AT&T produced it under license.
Cute.
Fascinating.
Las Vegas had some of those, right? Yeah,
Las Vegas had them. What did you say in Las Vegas recording work, Renee? You said, the switchman said the name of it, but I can't quite remember what he said. It sounded like Pentacosta or Anaconda or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Along those lines.
Exactly.
I can't remember.
Pentacostal? Yeah, I'd never heard of it. Las Vegas had several things I'd never heard of. It had that, and it had the rotary switching. It was the only place in the United States I ever heard of that had the rotary switching. It was normally a European system.
Hmm.
Yeah, rotary switching, I found out for years later, was actually developed by Western Electric as a competitor to a panel. They wanted to come up with a competitor with something better than STEP. So they apparently had two internal engineering groups competing with each other, and one ended up developing panel and one ended up developing rotary, but rotary never caught on in the United States.
Interesting.
They used it in other countries.
But I have seen,
oh, interesting.
You know, I've certainly seen some phone company equipment that was kind of rotary in nature, for, I think, some step switches that were still kind of rotary.
Well, I mean...
Well, yeah, step switches are, but true rotary is totally different. True rotary is actually very much like panel, except in a rotary format instead of a 8-foot tall up and down format.
Right.
Okay. I think panel and I would have to say probably rotary, sort of went right by me. I missed both of those.
They were only in major cities. They were never used in most places. Well, rotary, I say, was never used in the United States except in Las Vegas, and maybe I think I remember somewhere else. I forget. But
I think
panel
Florida
was very,
comes to mind.
Yeah, exactly. But panel was very big, but only in big cities. Mm-hmm. It was never used in small towns.
One of the other things that that started happening in Florida and a few other places that I can't be absolutely sure of all the places that it was they were multiplexing calls, you know, using one copper pair or two copper pairs and getting extra lines out of it.
Well, they did that a lot in subdivisions where they didn't want to put a lot of phone wires in. My brother ended up with that out in Iowa when he was living in a small town, you know, little town out there. They had like a subdivision, so they put in this thing that switched calls and multiplex them onto frequencies.
Higher frequencies
right around, you know, slightly higher than
but
AM.
That's still done in California. There are places in California that still do that just because they're short of wires.
Yep.
And stuff.
Yeah, it's called a pair gain. They actually do it with DSL technology these days.
Aha. Well, at that time, they were basically doing it with the radio technology, and you could, you know, I guess you could probably have tuned it in on some, you know, if you had a radio near it.
But the thing, of course, at that point, you've lost all DC connection. I mean, you're doing it all just like you would a toll trunk.
Well, to some degree, except that I think it actually was, in effect, radio carried on the lines.
Yeah, but if one person, but the point is, how does it know whether the DC is coming from party A that's getting the direct connect,
mm-hmm.
or party B that's on the
Well, because they're identical systems at both ends.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. And what's really interesting is, you know, speaking of that, right here where I'm served out of, this is a very new area. The switch, the CO office was not built until 1985, and that's where the switch was. It's always been a DMS CO. There's never been anything older in it.
Uh-huh.
And the house I'm living in was built in 1999. And so what's really interesting is the fact that my wireline phone is actually fiber optic cable all the way up to the curb.
Ooh. Wow.
Fiber till about, I would say maybe 200-300 feet away from where I am in the
so
last
there, so
of feet is copper.
There's a little pedestal somewhere that converts it.
Well, actually, no, it's not a pedestal. It's all in the ground. There's a metal plate that covers it. You
okay.
take off the metal plate, and there's
so
these multiplexing things in there.
Right, right.
The other thing about those particular multiplex systems I was talking about that they used in the subdivisions and other places, where they were notoriously bad, you couldn't get more than probably the minimum legal amount of bandwidth for computers out of them. Probably
right.
19.9 or whatever, or, I mean, 9, whatever.
Yeah, it would be 19.4.
Right. 14.4 or less.
Right.
I'm trying to remember what the one under that is. It was all the phone
96K.
96K, yeah. That's all they legally have to provide you with on a dial-up. And so these things would generally do that, but that's about it.
And
we had people really having trouble,
and of course,
they wanted
the other
to be
thing,
able to use it.
The couldn't. Other thing you would be totally totally screwed out of would be DSL.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I know
Pacific Bell ran into that problem a lot when the DSL started becoming big. People were upset that they couldn't because they had pair gain systems. And
well, not only that,
and
fiber optic would be the same way. You couldn't put DSL over fiber.
Well, I think actually you can, because the way the new modern cars are designed is that it's basically, you know, it's an OC1 or an OC3 or whatever. So they've got a standard, you know, DS0 voice channel for your voice,
mm-hmm.
and then for the DSL, all they do is they split off a 1.5 megabit DS1, and then just kind of multiplex that onto your line for DSL.
Interesting.
Yeah, there's a complex in San Francisco, for example, that actually has a special SEC tariff just for that one complex. That's all. If it's a brand new, giant apartment building or condo building or something, that
they want to market
fiber. Yeah, they put in fiber into it right from the beginning, so they have a special tariff that's exactly like the DSL tariff, except it only applies to that one building for the bringing in the internet data over for the fiber, but it's the same speed ranges as DSL and all that.
Interesting.
Cool.
Kind of cool, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they have planted an enormous amount of fiber in this town, some of which belongs to AT&T, some of which is, you know,
uh-huh.
no, not this town, actually,
our town.
Yeah.
Well, typically, the way long distance works, like, for example, if you get a T3 from AT&T, like, for example, here in Vegas, in downtown Las Vegas, there is a DMS 200, or I think it's a 200. There's a DMS 200 tandem, and that is connected to AT&T. The nearest AT&T number 4 ESS is all the way in San Bernardino. So if you want to get a T3 or whatever from AT&T, what has to happen actually is AT&T doesn't run, you know, fiber from San Bernardino all the way to your premises, because that would be absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
But what they do is they split off, you know, a T3 level trunk on their optical carrier trunks from the San Bernardino 4E to the DMS 200 in downtown Las Vegas. And then what happens is that, like, say you're served out of, you know, and you're served out of a specific local CO. So that, they then split off, what happens is at that point it becomes the responsibility of the local company to carry the thing, and AT&T pays them for it. And what will happen is that Sprint, who is a local company here, will split off, you know, whatever they need from their trunks and make that your part of the bandwidth and make that a dedicated circuit from the DMS 250 or 200 to your local switch,
mm-hmm.
and there that splits off onto whatever fiber runs to your premises.
Interesting.
So it's partly the exchange domain of the local phone company, partly the domain of the long-distance company.
It always puzzles me to think about, you know, Where is somebody like SBC getting their long distance? If they're, you know, are they just going with the other people in their the various Bell companies and working around with them, or are they actually buying buying service from AT&T or from one of the other long distance carriers?
The way I believe it works is this, and I'm not entirely sure on this, but the way I believe it works is that for calls like within, for example, say you're in California, mm-hmm. for calls within California, SBC already has enough tandems there that they can just route it over their own tandems.
Sure.
But for calls like, say you're calling, Seattle, Washington, which is a Qwest area, for that, I believe they, to get that working, I believe they contract out with another carrier.
Okay, that was kind of what I figured, but I wasn't absolutely sure. What with all of the
news stories to the effect that they were contracting out with some carrier, although I don't remember the name.
With all of the with all of the mergers and recombinations of things, there's only like four or five companies anymore that used to be Bell operating companies.
Right. There's Qwest. There's SBC. There's Bell South and Verizon.
Yeah.
And then, there is Southern New England Telephone, but okay, SBC bought that. Never mind. And then, of course, there's AT&T.
Right. Now, of course, AT&T doesn't own any of the local operating companies, at least officially, that I know of.
No, they don't own a stake in any of the local companies. They have started providing competitive local service.
That's right. And so has MCI, and so has,
But what's really funny about the AT&T competitive local service is that you'll actually, if you sign up for their local service, oftentimes you'll get a dial tone right out of their 4ESS, which never used to happen. That was a toll tandem.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting. Turn on your mic if you want to.
Well, that's right. Yeah, probably just because they don't have that many lines buying it, so they'd probably eventually split it off to a separate switch if they had more customers.
Right.
That's probably true. You're getting it because it... There's not that many people on it, but...
Yeah. What's interesting is that Las Vegas, the local phone company, is Sprint. Is that anywhere else, or is that only a Las Vegas thing?
Okay, no. Okay, here's what happened. Here's the story of Sprint. Sprint is comprised mainly... The local part of Sprint is comprised mainly of what used to be Centel, which is Central Telephone Company,
yep.
and United Telephone Company.
Right.
And what happened was, I believe Southern Pacific actually started the Sprint long distance...
That's correct.
Company.
That's what Sprint,
because yeah,
there was a
Southern Pacific Railroad something.
Right.
But and so what happened was United Telephone eventually bought that.
Mm-hmm.
So United Telephone bought Sprint and then decided they wanted to change their name to Sprint. So United Telephone, in kind of some reverse merger thing, became Sprint and then bought Centel.
But the interesting thing was, for a while, they were GTE Sprint.
Yeah, I think it's at one point GTE owned Sprint, and then
yep.
maybe United bought it from GTE.
I think that's it, yeah.
But as far as local phone service, actually being the local, the primary local phone company in a city, is Nevada unique in that, or does Sprint do that other places?
No. Sprint, wherever there used to be Centel or United Telephone, is now Sprint. For example, Illinois, North Carolina, everything you hear like on phone trips is Carolina Telephone is now Sprint.
Right, and obviously...
parts of Florida that are United... Sprint. In
right.
fact, I could probably tell you exactly what states that exists in.
Illinois,
so,
I can think of one of the, Centel areas where we were talking about, Dixon, Illinois. That was probably Sprint now.
It's possible. And I know that, obviously, Des Plaines is kind of screwy. I don't remember what they did.
I think they turned into Sprint, too.
They might have, but I thought they kind of like somehow turned into some... version
whatever,
of a
wasn't
merger
there something called
with Ameritech
Altel,
or something.
What was it, Altel or Al?
Yeah,
Altel. Altel is one of the little independent companies.
Yeah.
There's Altel. There's a number of them. There's like Altel. There's, there's so many little tiny independent companies. It's not even
yep.
funny.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking. There's a whole ton of companies called United Telephone, and they have little patches all over.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And again, mostly in small towns where they just, where it used to be just an operator sitting in somebody, a switchboard sitting in somebody's living room.
Right.
And maybe 15, yep. maybe 1,000 or less subscribers would be all there would be.
A friend of ours used to have, I think it was his aunt that used to actually be the telephone in the living room in a little community of about 500 people up in Wisconsin.
Yep.
And that was well into the 70s.
Wow.
I thought that was pretty cool.
the other big independent that's coming to mind now is Continental Telephone.
Yes.
And then General Telephone bought that, I believe, in the early 90s.
Could be.
And it was kind of funny because I was driving at one point from San Francisco to Las Vegas, and there's a town along the way called Boron, which was a Contel town. And so I drove past the CO in Boron. What's funny is there's an old faded hand-painted sign on the front of that CO that says Continental Telephone Company. And then screwed onto the side of that is the GTE logo, and then on the building is Verizon.
Yike.
That's funny.
So it's like you follow the lineage, right?
Yeah.
By the signage.
It used to be just, you know, a lot of little independent companies. That's really the whole... Let me plug my website again for new callers, www.phonetrips.com. But the whole point of the phone trips originally is when I moved up to Seattle and I was driving around, I noticed that every little town had its own independent phone company that was just family owned or something just for that one little town.
Mm-hmm.
So I started recording those.
And I want to tell you that I have enjoyed hearing a good number of those phone trips. They're really, really interesting.
Very enlightening. Certainly a lot of stuff I didn't even know about. I mean, I'd heard rumors about some of the stuff, like putting power into phone lines, which never seemed to me like a good idea. But once I heard your some of your programs, I realized people actually did that sort of thing.
Yeah, I wish I had recorded it. Yeah, no one ever recorded that as they were doing it that I know of. No.
Evan Dorbell did. Evan Dorbell made a recording of it. To reset N1 carrier, he would do that to the line.
Okay.
He would close to whatever relay in the central office made it appear to the trunk that the line was on hook.
Mm. Uh-huh.
Okay.
So it would send the 3700 hertz tone onto that trunk.
Uh-huh.
That's how you'd reset the N1 carrier.
Right.
That was
not knocking off calls or anything like that. The other thing.
Right, not knocking off the call.
Yeah.
But if you do that on like a 1ESF. That's not going to work anymore. So don't try it, folks.
No, don't do that.
I have a funny Captain Crunch story having to do with that. It's not really about power, but I once went on a little phone trip with Captain Crunch, and we got to some town where, normally in the old days, you could not hang up on an operator.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of deliberately did that the operator could hold on to your circuit, so they just... I don't think it was really to avoid prank calls to them, but just once you dial the operator, they were kind of in control of everything, and you couldn't get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
Except, again, people could do it with power, but putting voltages in, people were able to knock the operator off sometimes.
Yike.
So we were in some small town where we dialed the operator from a payphone, and one of the friends with us kind of screamed some obscenities to the operator just to get the operator to hold on to the line. Deliberately, because we were kind of curious if we could knock it off or not. And then we found that 2600 could knock off the operator. And Crunch was so excited about that he was jumping up and down saying, "Wow, it's a knock the operator off the tandem town. Wow.
It was another kind of funny story that kind of reminded me of is that a friend of mine, I don't remember if he did it deliberately. I don't think so. But he was talking to an operator, and he maybe hit a touch tone accidentally. And the operator got a little offended and says, "I can play Deafy Deafy too,"
and
hit some sort of note that really blasted through his phone.
Ouch.
I don't know what the heck it was, but it wasn't something very pleasant.
Maybe the operators could turn on the tone that they do if you leave your phone off the hook too long. Maybe they
that
might
possible.
Have been it.
If they could turn that on.
Oh, that's funny.
That was pretty strange.
Yeah, I remember those little sirens that used to go off if you let... I mean, the things that are there now are kind of...
Tame
compared to what they used to be. In the old days, there was a loud siren that would just blast out loud even on the, on a handset. Oof.
Yeah. When you left the phone off the hook?
If you left the phone off the hook too long, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The limitation of that now is that there only is so much digital space in which to make a tone, so that's pretty much the loudest tone they can generate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The one of the things...
What were you going to say about Captain Crunch?
There's a rumor a week ago that he had died, but it was totally a rumor. But people asked me about it, and I kind of set the rumor out, and then... But then I bothered to call his company and find out that he was still alive. And
he was just
emailed him and stuff. But the rumor was,
right.
he's also active in rave circles and trance parties and things like that. He goes to that sort of stuff a lot.
Wow.
So apparently in those circles, there was a chiropractor who used the nickname Captain Crunch in those circles.
Oh, yike.
Because he does crunching of the back of your back or something. So Crunch in those circles, I think the story is that this chiropractor had been popular as the name Captain Crunch first. So our Captain Crunch just called himself the Crunch Man in those circles.
Well, the
chiropractor died, and people got it mixed up and thought it was the freak who died. And it was
okay.
I see. Yeah, I got to hear one of the people, I guess, sent out a disc to Byron with some of that old Captain Crunch interview.
Stuff,
that
right.
was fascinating to hear because I'd never heard all of it. I heard that there was a piece of an interview, I think, on the NPR show that we have from another station that, you know, where the same guy had, you know, there was an early interview from, like, the early 70s, and apparently he worked at a couple of different stations. And again, I think it might have been Lorenzo that did those interviews. But anyway, we had
a long interview with Crunch.
Right. And I actually still have to listen to that one. But I heard I had a segment of it that they had included in an NPR show of one of the other ones from a slightly, you know, another station, but he was the same interviewer.
Well, he was on an interview by Art Bell. There's a really long interview on the Art Bell radio show.
That's
too.
True, too.
Right, I heard that one. That was really good.
Yeah. He's quite an interesting fellow.
Yep.
But I would say that most of the things that were able to be done, if not all of the things that were able to be done in that time frame, are pretty much by the wayside
now, which, considering it's, you know, 30 years ago, makes sense.
I mean, they were talking even in that the various interviews. Well, by 19 so and so, we won't be able to do this anymore, you know.
Yep.
Right. By the year 2000.
Yeah. In the year 2000, we're all flying around in our little cars that can fly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's how we
right.
know it's not the year 2000 yet. We don't have our flying cars.
That's right.
That's right.
I work
just
my
barely.
Car.
We're just finally getting the flat panel TVs they promised us in the 50s.
Oh, in just 10 years, they'll be on the wall. Yeah.
Well, they're there now. It's just too expensive.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Right. But I mean, they were talking about it in the 1950s.
Yeah.
But back then, they had no idea how to make them.
That's right.
Right. And by now, we were supposed to all have video phones on our desks, too.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
That was funny because a friend of ours worked for a company in the early 70s, and they had a video phone.
They could talk to, like,
three people.
And you
could call the four people in the Chicago area.
That had the video phone.
One of them was in the Museum of Science and Industry.
Well, Chicago was the prototype for the Bell Systems video service. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
And
Bell Systems actually had a whole standard and everything of how to do it.
And
Seattle, by the way, has a couple of them, of those video.
By the way, did you ever?
And one of the things you could dial with it was the picture phone weather.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Did you, by any chance, ever see one of the original Bell telephone card dialers?
Yeah,
I've seen
sure.
Those
Do you have one? I can't remember.
I don't have the machine. I have a card for one, but I don't have the actual machine.
I've got a bunch of the cards. I think I've still got a bunch of the cards that aren't even punched.
Yeah, but those were very popular at one time.
It was an interesting device because you when you put the thing in there, you actually had access to all, if I remember correctly, and I may be wrong about this, but I think you actually had access to all 16 of tones.
Uh-uh.
Or if you didn't, you could get it. There was a way to modify it.
In theory, most touch tone pads could be converted, but I never was able to make it work. Either that or it was just one of the phony stories that went around.
No, that's true.
There's tons of those.
Yeah. The old-fashioned touch tone, the first touch tone pads made by Western Electric that had a coil with a transformer.
Yep.
And
yes.
And only one transistor. They're so proud of the fact they got the whole thing, only one transistor and all that stuff. There was always a fourth tap off of that coil.
Okay.
And you could switch one of the columns. You could just switch taps so that, and put a switch in. I saw people do this, so that you flip the switch and then the right hand column would then switch over to the other frequencies. For people who don't know what we're talking about, The Touchstone standard actually has a fourth column defined.
Right. A, B, C, and D.
By military Audubon systems. The only place it was actually ever used,
yep.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see if I can generate some of those tones here and play over the speakers just to let people know what they sound like.
Yeah, I could never make it work right.
But yeah, with the little switches on the top of the phone, wouldn't that be a genuine Mark Brunet snail-a-phone?
Well, for that purpose, I guess so. Yeah, me and my friends used to make these phones where we would put like these cheap Radio Shack toggle switches, drill a hole into the case of the phone and put them up there. And typically, you do two of them. Like, one would switch lines, and one would if you had two phone lines, you could use one switch to switch your phone between the two phone lines, one to put
yep.
on hold.
I forgot
what we did with them. But because it was these two little switches sticking up from the phone, it kind of looked like the feelers of a snail, so we called them snail-a-phones, you know?
Weird.
Cute.
Yeah, the frequency...
So you could do a snail-a-phone with a switch like that to switch frequencies of your touchstone pad or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess there are certainly still some things. I guess there was some banking services that originally used them.
I bought a phone in a flea market once that had the fourth column, and it claimed that the reason you would want to buy this phone is that it'll work with future services and things.
Mm-hmm.
But I never saw anything that actually used them.
Yep, I didn't either. But it was like 1633 megahertz was the extra frequency that they combined
kilohertz,
with
I
the various
mean,
columns.
You mean kilohertz?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It was just basically one... The thing is, it was a matrix, and obviously it would have been
instead
four
of three
by four.
Right, it would have been four by four.
Right.
And it used to fascinate some phones. If you push diagonal buttons, you would disable one or the other of the tones.
Exactly.
Other phones would just kill them all. I mean, it depended on how they made the
they
system. I was always curious of when I found a phone, I had to find out what it did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the way the standard Western Electric touchstone pads work is that when you press a button, it hits two switches, one for the column that you're pressing and one for the row that you're pressing.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And those two circuits go through whatever coils in the phone and generate that combination of tones.
Yep.
And that's why that little switch trick worked.
Mm-hmm.
Here is touchtones A, B, C, and D, and I don't know... The conference we're on will actually filter out touchstones, so I don't know if these will go through, but here's what they sound like. Let me turn that up. Hang on.
I heard that.
You could just barely hear it.
Yep.
Yeah, let me turn it up a bit. That was too loud, Al.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Those are the touchstones.
They're cute. They don't really sound right, but they're came through something. But then I have a story about those. So I knew a kid when I was in Seattle who was dialing into things and pressing those ABCD buttons all the time. And I kept telling him, you're totally wasting your time. Why would anything possibly be listening to those? I mean, it was only the military systems that ever listened to them, so why are you wasting your time doing this? But suddenly he actually stumbled on something that actually did hear them.
Well, mm-hmm. some of the directory assistance stuff
exactly,
could hear it,
exactly.
And there were
yeah,
some other
exactly.
systems that at one point
yeah, but,
could...
But they're just so weird that they were keyed up. But mm-hmm. what you had to do, you had to dial an area code in 555-1212, and you had to be blasting a continuous stream of that tone because it had to go through at the instant the operator answered. And of course, mm-hmm. you couldn't predict exactly when the operator was going to answer. So you just had to do a long, continuous... path of it, you can kind of hear in the background, even with the tone going on, you can hear in the background enough to know when the operator answered, so you could then let go of the tone.
Mm-hmm.
And then somehow that would switch it over, that one little pulse of it would switch you over, would take you away from the operator, switch you over to a little internal PBX system within the information office that had...
Uh-oh. Hello?
I think we lost him.
I think we did too. I heard this little beep and he was gone.
Hope he calls back.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure
he did. You know what? I didn't get knocked off. Something about my voice, it thought it was a touch tone, and it suddenly started asking me to enter a private room number.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
I got
it. How far did it get? What did you?
Pretty much at the point where it started asking you, I guess. That's what we call talk off. That's the technical name for that is talk off.
Yeah. But do I need to repeat anything, or was it?
No, you were talking about that. You were mentioning that it got into this PBX thing, and
that's about where you cut off.
Exactly. And, okay, and that PBX thing, just you could ring different numbers that I think maybe a supervisor would answer some numbers, but what people would really call it for is that there was a loop around test in there that would connect people together.
Uh-huh.
So if you arranged with someone to call, both of you call the same area code 551212, and both do this and both go into that loop around, you could talk to each other through it.
Cool.
So just a very private way, and it wouldn't be charged. Back then, information was free, so you
right.
Didn't get charged for.
Whoa. Although depending on when you're talking about, they fairly quickly started putting supervisory equipment, not necessarily supervisory, but they would start checking because they knew that people were using blue boxes and other things on information numbers, so they started monitoring that,
right,
because if you were on too long, they knew something funny was going on.
Right.
Yep, that was happening a lot. And one of the things that also was you know, with the various loop arounds in terms of the test things, it still amazed me that there were as many of those toll-free loops left in service. And I have to believe that somebody friendly at the phone company decided to stick those in.
Oh, a lot of times they did.
Yeah, I remember there was an Evan Doorbell tape where he actually mentions that there was one conference in New York that the switchman actually broke the recording intentionally,
mm-hmm,
so that the conference could continue because they were listening into the conference and they enjoyed it.
Aha.
Yeah.
Well, there used to be one I can remember dialing where you'd have to dial back several times, but if you hit it just right, the recording would disappear.
Yep.
And there were a lot of people that would use that, and the numbers weren't consecutive. They were several digits apart, so it was really kind of neat.
There's a whole field of conferences that were made out of busy signals or recordings that were too soft and multiple people could talk over the recording.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of that stuff going on for a while.
Yep.
Yeah, back in the old days, people would call radio stations and get the busy signal and would talk over them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. No, my favorite one is in Seattle, and a lot of other cities, I think, too, had what we called the baby cry. If you dialed a bad prefix or just dialed a disconnected number or something, sometimes instead of getting a recording, you'd get a tone that go...
Oh, yeah, I remember those.
Okay. Well, the ones in Seattle would have a little break. I have no idea why, but it would go... There's a little break there. Well, it turned out that other people on the same prefix listening to the same recordings could talk to each other, but only over the break because the tone was too loud to talk otherwise.
Uh-huh.
So you get things like... Any girls? Yes. What's your number? One digit at a time. They give their phone number out one digit at a time.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that sounds like it's something I kind of remember. Trying to think what the... something I was just going to mention, and I've spaced it now. Darn it.
Uh-oh.
Because it was rather interesting. But, darn, what was that? Hate that. Oh, maybe I'll think of it.
We were doing a wee, wee, what's your number? Wee, wee. Maybe that'll target memory.
You'll never know.
But, yeah, I remember a friend of mine was telling me that when he was a kid in Los Angeles, he would, like, dial a number, and there would be like a period where you're before your call went through or something, you just hear someone yelling,
"Something
like
that, sure."
Chicago people used to do that over the time signal at the end of the year, like New Year's Eve.
Yeah. And in fact, there were a number of local loops in Chicago that you could that were battery test or various other things. That if you could actually talk through those, and some of them were supervised and some of them weren't. So you had to kind of mess with it to see which ones were which. And that was another interesting thing too. Some of the stuff was free to local, but not free from toll.
Long distance. Yep.
We could.
Well, in fact, the communicator was one of those things that for the longest time was free locally, but not by long distance.
Then, that's kind of a weird thing because it started out free from everywhere. And then eventually they made it pay. You had to pay if it was a toll, you know, if you were outside of the area. But they eventually put in an 800 number.
Yep.
And that got you to the exact same recording, but it was obviously free from the whole state. It was only a statewide number, which was interesting, of course, because it was Illinois Bell. So I guess it.
Right. Well, I mean, what's interesting is the fact that, you know, 800 numbers took such a long time. I mean, surprisingly, such a long time to really catch on. I mean, I've got things from the 80s. I mean, I have an answering machine that was made in the mid-80s, and on the bottom it says, if you need this, call us collect at 213-435-5555 or whatever.
You know, there's another...
That's because the 800s were very expensive at one time.
There was another...
You know, they didn't have the little forwarding stuff. You know, nowadays, an 800 number is just something that forwards to a regular number.
Yep.
But it used to be you had to put in a dedicated circuit, and it was just very expensive stuff to do it.
And the other interesting thing they had what they called... the heck was it? There was a local version of the 800.
Well, yeah, there were. Type. In fact, there were several different what they call bands.
Well, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking that you used to say, from city, you know, from the city call so and so, from suburbs call blah 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 blah.
Oh, you're thinking of what did they call that? Where you'd call Enterprise.
Enterprise 364. You know, it was a, and it would, and when you called that, you got an operator, and then you'd tell her what you wanted to. What you were calling.
Yep.
And that was it was in effect a local version of a collect call that the stores or whatever it was were paying extra for to be able to have a suburban, you know, the person be able to call a Chicago number without having to pay for it. And in those days, you paid through the nose from some of these far suburbs.
Yeah, Chicago was a message unit, wasn't it?
Was what?
As far as I remember.
Message
Chicago
units.
Message units.
Yes, service, that's correct.
Chicago was one of the first places to get message units. I think L.A. got them pretty early as well. I'm not sure who else did.
They were done very... It was a very strange situation in the early days. You would... if you were within the city limits on a home telephone... And you could dial anyone else within the city limits, and it was one unit per call. You know, you could talk as long as you wanted, but it cost you one unit to call anywhere within the city. As soon as you went outside of the city, like the neighboring adjacent suburbs, like Oak Park or Evanston, then you were charged by mileage and you were charged a number of cents per minute, whatever it was. The closer ones was like, you know, 2 or 3 cents a minute or one unit a minute or however they worked it, you know, so that but it was definitely, it added up. The longer you talked, the more it cost you. Unless you were right at the border, like if you were, like let's say Howard is the northernmost street in Chicago. On one side of Howard, you've got Evanston. The other side of Howard, you have you have Chicago. So if you were on the Chicago side and you called right across the street, you would pay per minute. But if you did it from a payphone from that for that same you know, to the same basic area, it was a single unit call. It basically, it wasn't in units. You'd just pay the dime or whatever it was at the time.
And
that was true.
Into Oak Park from the Chicago area.
From
as
certain
well.
Areas of Chicago.
I mean, we were right, you know, 4 blocks from Oak Park, but we would have paid minutes to call Oak Park. But we could go to a payphone quite a few blocks east of us, which meant it even further away from Oak Park, and yet the payphone could call it free.
And people
You and the payphone would have been served out of the same switch anyway. So
absolutely.
I know.
From
so I never,
point of view, that's not any longer or shorter call.
No, it never made any sense.
It made absolutely no. And the other interesting thing is the people in Oak Park got what they called message unit plans of some sort, and they could call the city with certain, you know, depending on how far they were, how many miles or whatever.
Usually a distance of 8 or 10 miles or something.
They could call for one, you know, for the single unit within that area. Now that has proliferated pretty much everywhere. You know,
right, you get an 8 mile radius or something
from your central office
area, from your central office that you can call, and that's it.
That's your single unit charge.
Mm-hmm.
And anything farther than that, it becomes an A call, a B call, or a C call, depending on how far away from, you know, how many more miles it goes. But they did originally have something called the Call Pack Unlimited, in which case you could dial the entire, which at the time was all one area code, 312. You could dial anything in that area code, and in some parts of 815, and it was still a single, you know, you didn't get charged any extra units. It was like $30 or $40 a month for this thing in those days, which,
yep.
But it still was, it was something you could do.
In fact, what we did when we had it is we put in three phone lines because it turned out to be cheaper to have two phone lines with just message units and a third line.
The basic package,
right, and
you know.
The basic phone service, and then have a single line with the unlimited on it, and we would make all our calls on the unlimited line and use the other two for incoming, because it was actually cheaper to have all three lines than to get two lines with unlimited, because they doubled the cost.
But it was kind of strange.
It's bizarre billing circumstances.
Yes, it was. It was very bizarre.
But speaking of that, and also just an example of how the prices have changed again, remember Watts lines?
Yes.
You used to be able to get outgoing Watts lines, which would be a separate line that you would pick up that you could make all the long distance calls you wanted at a fixed price.
Right.
But that fixed price was like hundreds of dollars a month.
Yeah,
right.
$700, $1,000, something like that.
Before inflation, so it would be several thousand today.
Oh, yeah, it'd be several thousand today. This was in the late 60s.
Yeah.
And you know, you'd go to big companies and you'd find, well, you want to use our Watts line, blah, 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 blah.
And again, they did it by zones. There were, I don't remember how many, but you didn't necessarily get unlimited across the country. You'd get,
right,
you know, unlimited a certain amount of mileage, and depending on what your calling area needed to be, you would pay either more or less dollars. And a truly unlimited long distance, you know, Watts service, wide area telephone service, would have been very expensive.
Yeah. Also at that, when 800 numbers first came in, the prefix was like an area code. The prefix would be dedicated to a particular part of the country.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You could tell from the prefix of an 800 number, you know, approximately where it was.
And
like,
later on,
one prefix per area code, or exactly how they allocated it.
Later on, they allocated them to different phone companies.
Right, exactly.
Right. Once there were multiple long distance carriers, each one would get different numbers.
Different banks of numbers.
Different banks.
Yep. Yeah, because I got a couple of really good 800 numbers at one point, only because a brand new carrier opened and they got some prefixes, so all the numbers were wide open in those prefixes, so I was able to get a couple of good numbers.
I like getting numbers like blah 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 talk or blah 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 call,
yeah,
or.
Well, I have blah, 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 freak.
Uh-huh. That's always a good idea.
Oh, yeah.
There's, in our case, we have one that's TVRO, television receive only, because it was totally amazing that it actually showed up, you know, that it was available, and I couldn't possibly pass that up.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, if and when I ever move somewhere, what I want to do is like try and get a prefix with three of the same number, like 333 or 666 or whatever,
mm-hmm,
and have 2368 as the last four.
Oh, yeah, that would
be great.
And you know what's
of course, for some people in the audience may not remember, that was a standard
555-2368. Whenever they gave an example in the phone book telling you that this or that call could be done, they'd tell you 555-2368.
Yep.
Always an area code 311.
Yes.
Is there an area code 311 yet?
No, that was the whole point. It's not assignable as an area code.
That would be come to think of it, 311 has become sort of the local version of the 911 not emergency numbers.
Right. Yeah,
so,
which I think is something that is needed, so that's a good
absolutely, it's not a bad idea at all.
And because, with, I mean, there have been a number of times when I've just, like, had to call the police, but it wasn't really an emergency. I didn't know the number and stuff.
Right.
There was many years ago in Chicago, weather and police and fire had interesting phone numbers. Not sure if I can remember the prefix of them, but it was blah, 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 fire, blah, blah, blah.
Well, you know, in fact, wasn't it the entire prefix such that they started out F-I-R?
Well, that was it. FI5, FI7, 1212, or something like that.
Yeah,
and police was PO5
something. Yeah,
1212.
Yep.
And that's another thing.
What was emergency back then? Did Chicago have an old number before 911?
No, there was no such thing.
It was always 911.
911 became sort of a was a later addition, and as I said,
before that it was PO something.
PO5, 1212.
Okay.
Because Los Angeles had one. When I was growing up in Los Angeles, I remember it was 116, and they would always teach it to school kids, if you're in a fix, dial 116.
Ooh, I like that.
Well, I know that a lot of the local, really small phone companies, again, the Centels, the GTEs, they would often have 11 things, you know, 116, 117, 115, be various phone company internal things.
Well, 112 would have been the inward.
No, that was 121.
121. Okay.
Here in Las Vegas, 117, I believe, is still the time and temperature.
Ooh, weird.
Another strange thing. Once they came up with the various things that, like, *76*, this*, that, whatever. One of the things that they would have you do is, if you didn't have a touchtone phone, you could get to that by dialing 116 or whatever it was. Since you couldn't dial a star, they would have you dial 11 before the number of the thing you were trying to accomplish.
That still works, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Didn't you have on one of your conference machines or something, like something along those lines?
Me?
To get people to call in with their caller ID unblocked or something?
Oh, yeah. It's a very long story, but yeah, I fake people out in a way by getting them to dial something unblocks their caller ID, but they don't realize it because they're doing 1-1 instead of a star or a pound or something. Yeah.
It's like, the recording says we have a special arrangement with the phone company. So if you dial this number and you parse it all strangely, it's like you dial, 118-241-55.
What they're really doing is turning off their caller ID and then calling my number by parse it funny so that they
yeah.
Right. They don't realize they're dialing, 1182 plus 1 plus the area code plus the number.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I love it.
Yeah, it's funny.
And it's funny how people remember phone numbers with that proper rhythm. If you don't say it in exactly the da 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 da,
it throws you off.
It throws you way off.
Yeah, so all these funny doing that, only like one person ever figured out what I was doing, you know.
And what's really funny is, like, in the reverse sort of story, I could never remember my checking account number until I realized it was 10 digits, and I just parsed it like a phone number, and I can remember it.
Okay.
Yeah. There you go. And, I've done that over the years. If it's a number that's a 10-digit number that I need to remember, I can always think of it as a phone number.
Yeah, 334.
But
yeah, it's just interesting the way that the human mind forces things. Apparently, that was actually the reason behind the original naming of exchanges, was that they thought, oh, people will never remember such long strings of digits like 7 numbers.
Well, yeah.
Let's give it a cute name to help them remember it, and then, a short number of digits.
Yep. And
because no one will ever, God forbid, anyone will ever remember 555, 5555.
Yep.
Well, the funniest thing about
a lot of people felt that way.
The funniest thing about the 555 bit, of course, is they were giving those out in movies and stuff for many, many years.
Right.
I'm going to call my wife. I think it's 555-2368 or whatever it was,
Yeah.
And in those days, the only thing that actually that entire exchange was parceled out to directory assistance.
1212, yeah.
No matter what you dialed, you got directory assistance. That is not true anymore.
Oh, no, not at all. Yep.
And I don't remember exactly when that became untrue, but...
I would guess probably sometime around the advent of digital switching.
Probably.
So
that's another cute...
between 1979 and 1985.
Right. Another cute thing about that is that about the time that the digital switching came in, people could have trunking numbers that were not consecutive. And
right.
that was impossible in the early days.
And you could
do that on one
yet, then? But you had to be fairly... Yeah, but crossbar could do that too, but you had to be fairly close. It couldn't jump too far, but it could jump a little bit or something.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. I don't believe that. I think the step couldn't even do it at all, if I remember right.
No, definitely not. No,
no. I've heard step doing that.
But I mean, only consecutively.
Oh yeah, consecutively. Yes. But
step can certainly do hunting. Yes, but
one of the neat things that again I remember about the old days of the old, the steps and the old crossbars were that radio stations would get these mass calling numbers, which were, in effect, hardwired so that they wouldn't bring down the entire exchange, which used to happen when they'd get contests. So,
yeah.
But there was always a backdoor number that if you knew it or you could figure it out, you could usually get in without a busy signal.
But believe it or not, people got arrested for stuff like that. That was legally considered fraud, and every once in a while someone would get arrested if they were winning too many prizes.
In a way, that would make sense, because you weren't playing by the rules, but I never actually knew anybody that got into trouble for it. I didn't know too many people who did it, but thought it was kind of neat to figure it out.
Another thing, in small towns, the number 9 blah, 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 2-9, blah, blah, or 9-2, blah, blah. They would put the 9 in there to give it the, to make, if it was a payphone. But
put the payphones in 9,000 block, yeah.
But the number really was like a 6 or something. They didn't even have any,
go
up to the 9s.
What happened in Centel, I think it was Centel, yeah. I think it was 2 or 4 that was equivalent to the 9. And if it was a home number, you'd end up with that with a 4, but it was tied to the 9 bank in such a way that you could, if you gave the operator
the four
number instead of the 9, they wouldn't realize it was a payphone.
Right. And then what would happen? That would happen because the 9,000 block would be multiplied onto the 4,000 block.
Yep.
Yes.
So it was actually, if you dialed, you dialed, the way it would work is, the way step works is you have when you dial a number, you have a selector that goes up to a certain level depending on how many pulses you dial, and then it, cuts over into the trunk, so you have kind of like a noise that cuts over.
Mm-hmm.
And so what can happen is, for example, say you want to multiple the payphone onto 9, but you don't want to bother with all the expense and all the trouble of having another selector for it, for the 9 group. So what you do is you wire the 9 into the same thing as 4.
Mm-hmm.
So, it takes a slightly different route through the switching train, but when you dial, 554-200 or 9200, it goes to exactly the same line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that way,
and the reason they wanted to know whether it was a payphone or not, the reason that was important is the block collect calls.
Exactly.
Because, a guy could be standing there at a payphone saying, I'm making a collect call. I'll accept this call. Yeah.
But not all 9 numbers were payphones. Like
absolutely. That's
what this operator would do. It was information who would have the list.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So the operator would dial 555-1212 in that, internally you do 131 with MF to reach an information operator if there was a 9, so it was suspicious, and ask the information operator if that number was a payphone or not.
Okay. Yep.
Very interesting sound.
So obviously, you probably wouldn't want to do it, within your town, because the operator would know that there wouldn't be any 4, that 4 number was probably a 9 number.
Well, oddly enough, it didn't happen in the town I was in. They never noticed it.
Oh, sure, I'll accept that pay.
Exactly.
Well, I guess it depended on how alert the operators were.
Mm-hmm.
Step just makes some really interesting noise. I think it's, to listen to, it's my favorite kind of switching system.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you have the dial tone, you know, that comes on, you dial the number, then you hear all these things which correspond. It's just very logically laid out. You know, you dial the number and whatnot.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and do the station IDs here. It's a little bit early, but it's close enough. So we'll be right back.
Okay.
The search for extraterrestrial intelligence, also known as SETI, is not the only group sending signals into outer space. We too are hoping there's life on other planets. From the internet to space, the universe, and beyond, this is the Wookiee Satellite Radio Network, AMC 7, Transponder 5, 7.5 wideband audio. Brought to you by Superstar Netlink Turner Vision. Their number is 1-800-395-9557.
For the best in talk, tunes, and more, this is RFD.
Hello, everybody out there in Internet Radio Land. This is your football buddy saying you're listening to Gator Radio. Oh, Nelly.
One way to sit at night. There are a lot of them, sorry.
You don't want to pull that on me because I'll shoot you.
Now what was that all about?
WTMD LE Macomb.
Okay, we're back. Yes.
But yeah, Step by Step made some very interesting noises. In fact, my sister is a very, incidentally enough, is a very interesting representation of how Step can sound sometimes. And so if you imagine my sister as like a trimline phone, right? You have the earpiece and then you have the dial in the center. So you go off hook and you get a dial tone. Then you start dialing her. And it starts making kind of clicking, pulsating noises. Then you dial another digit, and it makes more clicking, pulsating noises.
I love that.
Yeah.
And that is the sound of Step in modern times.
Mm-hmm. That's cute.
The only place in North America you'll find that.
That was a cute laugh.
Say hello to them.
Hi.
Hi.
That was strange.
That was very strange.
Point out, we're starting, what, hour four?
Yep.
And this is Tech This for February 6, 2004.
And we're having...
2004.
In 2004, and we're having a phone trip, sort of.
We're tripping, man.
I'm having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That February 2nd was Square Root Day. That only happens very rarely because there was 2-2 and then 2004, so 2 times 2 equals 4.
Oh, yeah.
So they're very, very, very rare to get a Square Root Day year.
Oh, we've had a lot of interesting dates. You know, February 3rd was like 02, 03, 04. That was kind of cute.
Oh, yeah.
And a couple years back, we had 9999 or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
It was 02, 02, 02, and...
Yeah, we had a phone
we're going to have 04, 04, 04.
Yeah. For the 9 or 9, we had the dinner in L.A. in honor of that.
Yeah, you'd have to hire Robin Williams to go in and say niner. Close enough, anyway.
Wonder if anybody else in the channel has any more questions.
Good question. I don't know if they have any good questions.
Yeah, I think there might have been at least a couple of comments when I was downstairs. I don't know if you were looking at the time, but might scroll back. I even had a couple of comments, too.
And unfortunately, I was... See, I can't get close enough to actually read the thing, because if I do, I'll get a hum.
All the microphones make noise.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're supposed to.
Eventually, we need to get...
they don't know the words.
All right, we need to get all flat screen monitors or all
microphones. Don't do that, Kitty.
What was he doing?
He was batting at the power strip.
I'm trying to remember one of the comments.
Oh, okay. Dave in Virginia has another question, and it's, what about such things as calling adjoining payphones by looping around the world? I read about that in one of the articles about freaking in the
70s.
Yes.
That happened, yes.
Captain Crunch did that, I remember.
Wasn't that in the Esquire article?
I think it was,
I think it might have been.
Is that on the webpage? I have recordings of that, but I'm not sure if it's on the webpage or not. But are the recordings on the webpage about hanging up on that and all the...
In fact, that was in the great one NPR interview, show thing.
Well, that's what, where he was showing him how to do it.
And right, he was disconnected. You heard bleep, 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 bleep,
bleep. Maybe that's where I heard it. So I guess it's not on my page, but that's where I heard it.
Yeah, there's a recording on phone trips of tandem stacking, which is somewhat related. What you would do is you would string up an incredibly long call route. You would either do it by stacking tandems. You would have, you would make a call from the payphone to Los Angeles, to New York, to Los Angeles, to New York, to Los Angeles, to New York, to Los Angeles, back to the payphone next to you.
Yep, that's what it was, basically.
Yeah, but I think he also demonstrated going all the way around the world.
He was doing that, and he was going through satellite and, back and forth. And
lots of interesting things.
Yes, I used to like those gleeps.
Yep.
I guess part of the sound was the 2600 popping back in, but
that's
it had
right.
a very strange sound to it.
Yeah.
But there were filters that would key. The things would be done with the 2600, so it would generally filter it out, but sometimes as a transition, you hear a little bleep of it as a transition.
One of the radio networks, I think it was CBS, used to have a similar sound when they would go from one program to another.
Yes, when they were their news thing, when they would feed in commercials or whatever, you'd hear that gleep. I just remembered, if I can not forget it again, what I had been thinking of, and now I'm not sure I'm going to be able to remember it again. I hate that.
Next time you think of it, write it down on a slip of paper.
That's what I ought to do.
And lose the paper.
Then I'd lose the paper.
Well, I just remember one of the comments that I made in the chat earlier is you were talking about, talking between noises and things. I remember when the phone company by me had gone to an automated version of collect calling where you would have 2 or 3 seconds to record your name and then it would play that back to the person who's supposed to accept the charges. We would, talk in that as quickly as we could in that 2 or 3 seconds. It was pretty neat.
Yeah, people have done that. Yeah. One of the things, I finally remembered it. What it was is one phone call we made, and I wish we had recorded it. We had no reason to realize we'd need to.
Oh, I know what you're talking about.
One of the phone batteries died during the ring cycle. So, the ring in the early 70s was kind of made up of two things, like a 30 cycle,
pulse
plus a particular frequency. Well, the battery for that frequency died. So it went, ring, ring,
which the weirdest sound I ever heard in my life. And we didn't record it.
No, it would have been priceless.
Only once, how would you have known to record it?
Exactly. Yeah, I've only heard it once in my life.
Yeah.
I just wish I had recorded it. It was great.
You know what? In the phone museum, they'd probably simulate it for you.
I bet we could.
Well, if we ever make it to Seattle, I want to check that place out.
Definitely got to check that place out.
Then we got to stop by and say hi to what's his name, Bob Rivers.
Yeah, right.
Yep, and watch them do a recording of Imagination Theater, which I believe is done at the Museum of History and Science, whatever it's called, in Seattle.
Cool. Seattle seems like a nice place.
Remember we were talking before about 555 numbers in the movies, how movies would use that prefix because the numbers didn't really exist. Did they see the movie Last Action Hero? Do you remember the scene I'm talking about in there?
Oh,
not
yes,
me.
I remember that. He's in the Blockbuster video, and he's trying to convince him that he's in a movie because, everybody in Los Angeles has a 555 number. Then he asks the video store clerk what her number is and what the number of the store is and what his number is. And
yeah. But then, because Arnold Schwarzenegger was trying to convince him that you're not in a movie, this is real life, and the kid was saying, no, this has to be a movie. And so he points that out. And he says, look, everyone has a 555 number. That means there's only 10,000 possible phones, and yet Los Angeles has millions of people, and the whole United States has millions of people. How is this possible? And Arnold's answer was, that's why we have area codes.
Okay.
Straighten that one out. Yeah.
That's funny.
Well, geez, I mean, Los Angeles is almost that way anyway. 213 is such a tiny little area code now.
Yeah. Yep.
It covers downtown Los Angeles.
Well, that's like what happens here. 312 is just a little teeny downtown section of Chicago now.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that I find interesting about that whole business with the 312, they did it supposedly to give everybody extra numbers, but they didn't want to give out the original numbers. Okay, like the number here is a 773 number. It used to be a 312 number. But if you dialed the 312 and this number, you'd still get a null recording, because they're not giving out, or at least unless they've done it within the last 2 or 3 years.
Well, the way it works, it's not assigned on a number by number basis. The way the telephone number is formatted is such: you have first the area code, which everyone knows what an area code is.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the next 3 digits of the number actually are assigned to a specific switching entity.
Exactly.
Right.
So what you
but
mean?
Once they threw away, anything north of X block or whatever, X 100 block here in town in Chicago is no longer 312. It's 773.
Well, right. What they do is they take, X switching entities and they put them into the different area codes.
Exactly.
Right. But here's
the interesting point. That means that they could reassign the prefix. It was 583. They could then give 583 within the to an office complex somewhere inside the 312 area code, because it's no longer the numbers in that prefix are no longer used, because they're all in 773 now.
Right, but the other reasoning behind that is one of two things. A, it's done in anticipation of future demand,
mm-hmm.
because you don't want it, because an area code split takes a while, and you don't want to get into a situation like, area code 310 in Los Angeles, where you actually don't have any available office codes to assign to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So you really do have a real number shortage. So you never, never, never want that to happen to start off with. And then, secondly, when it's always better from a numbering assignment standpoint to have lots of available assignable numbers than to have, a huge area code with somewhat of a few available assignable numbers, because you never know, there could be a huge spike in demand.
Yeah, there could be a huge company that needs 1,000 that needs a whole prefix or something,
right,
for their office building or whatever it happens to be.
And the other thing is that, they don't assign the prefixes that they reclaim in any sort of specific order. They just say, they put them back in the available pool, and they assign those randomly.
Yeah,
they're
okay.
Not necessarily going to first assign the one.
Yeah,
that
I basically understand it, but my point, I guess, in that was, here they've got all of these numbers that they now have, a glut of in area code 312.
Yeah, that change happened a long time.
It's been like 10 years or more. Since
more than
they
that,
made,
more like 20.
Okay.
Well, no, 772 would have to be an area code assigned after 1995.
773, yeah.
773, sorry.
Right, exactly. It was one of the odd. They did several of them all. Well, 708 was the first split out. They took the suburban area, basically Chicago proper, and all the suburbs were 312 originally. And the first split they did was to take all the suburbs, and that was all of the suburbs became 708, and gave Chicago city limits were, basically 312 became the size of Chicago city limits, and then they chopped up that a little bit more and made the northern suburbs
847,
right.
And then six.
Well, the 630 was an interesting one, because that was almost an overlay for a while.
Yep, I know. I had a cell phone that had that number.
Yeah, that's right. That went to court and they stopped it. But that was what they were trying to do.
Yes.
I'm going to see how many available office codes are actually in 312, because it doesn't look like a hell of a lot.
Well, now 312 is just a loop, basically. It's just downtown Chicago.
And, of course, it could have filled itself up pretty drastically at that point, because obviously There's a lot more office buildings and things of that sort that
everybody's
could take
got
a lot of
27
numbers.
Fax lines, 38 pages, you know, who knows what.
Not to mention cell phones.
There's only 107 assignable prefix codes in 312.
Wow.
Out of some 700-odd possible codes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, and from a numbering standpoint, that's kind of crunching it.
Yeah, I would say you're right.
I'm confused. What do you mean only available out of? I mean, they have the whole area code, don't they?
Well, he means those are the only ones that are left. They've assigned the other ones to somebody else.
I was thinking the other way around. I was like, what?
These are the ones that are left over that they could assign to somebody.
And they haven't.
And they haven't yet.
Mm-hmm. So apparently they're doing more with it than I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that we just haven't paid that much attention, and it just happens that this number, using the 312, that her number didn't, for whatever reason, get assigned, and it
right.
was just...
What was your old prefix?
The 583.
583. Let me see if that's even assigned. Well, 583 is assigned to someone. Let me see if I can check who that's assigned to. Let me look here.
In 312?
Yeah.
In 312. 312-583 is assigned. Let me pull that up.
Now for the tough question. Are you looking up in super secret stuff, or is this all, I mean, is this tools that anybody can get their hands on to look up this kind of information?
If you go to the North American Numbering Plan Administration,
NANPA or whatever, right?
Yeah, NANPA.com.
Okay.
Then you will be able to get numbering assignments. I'm looking up in a... actually in a database called the LURG, which is the Telcordia database.
Mm-hmm.
And that's generally terribly expensive. So mm-hmm. typically, 312 is owned by, let me pull that up here. That prefix is the Chicago, it's a DMS 100 in the CO on 520 South Federal Street in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
DMS 100 owned by Illinois Bell.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about that, of course, would be that they obviously reassigned that since it was originally.
You know your Chicago geography, Daryl. Where is that?
It's down near
South
the
Loop.
South Loop.
Right, but I mean, is there like any specific place at that address? Or
I don't know.
Okay.
It's a telephone office.
Federal Street is where the switch is located.
It's
that's
a telephone office.
And in fact, isn't that actually one of the major phone offices?
Yes, it is. Well, obviously, any of the phone offices downtown would be a major phone office.
That's true.
Obviously, they took that and put it to use downtown.
And I can remember, if you go back to the old, if I remember my information right, going back to old Cold War days, at one time they didn't want people to know the actual locations of switches.
Absolutely.
That's right.
You could call to try to find out, and like through the 796-9600 thing, but you could not get an address for certain of those numbers.
Yet I could drive all over Chicago, Northwest Indiana, and point one out. Oh, there's one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you knew what those buildings were.
Great big signs on them, for crying out loud.
And it's interesting, now that we're in the whole day of secrecy and post 9/11 and stuff, I'm kind of surprised they're not trying to at least somewhat hide that stuff again.
What the heck was Skolnick? Is he still around?
Skolnick, Sherman Skolnick?
Yeah. Remember, he used to have, what are these, what did he call it?
The Freedom Ring.
No.
No, that was a different one.
This was something or other to clean up the courts.
Something committee to clean up the courts.
Citizens Committee, probably?
Probably.
I think. Anyway, he used to have a phone recording. He was one of these conspiracy kinds of people, and it was really pretty interesting. But I don't know if he's still around.
But you can get that on MapQuest nowadays. MapQuest will do a list by area code and prefix, and it'll show you a map, and it'll home the map on the switch room.
Uh-huh.
And the interest,
right, but they don't really say that, but it's true.
But as I was saying too, though, with digital switches, you could literally make any number anywhere you wanted. They could make phone exchanges
easy these days.
Sure.
Yeah, number portability, at least locally within the rate center, is very easy. For example, here in Las Vegas, what Sprint will do is if you start off, say, on the east side of town and you get a number there, and you move all the way to the other side of town and you want your number to be ported, you don't want to change your number, they'll do that easily. I mean, I have friends who, they tell me their number and I just look it up and I try to be cute and I'm like, oh, okay, you're on so-and-so's side of town. They're like, no, I lived there 5 years ago.
So it's easy to do, but it screws up the geography if you don't if somebody pulls it and moves it somewhere else.
Right. And I mean, now that you can even move it from company to company, theoretically what you can do is you can take your if you port it to like Vonage or something, you can take your number and have your wireline phone, 702-363 something or other, and put that, take it to Florida.
Yep.
If you wanted to.
Or Japan.
Sure. Yeah, Japan. Take it entirely out of North America.
Yep. That's true.
You dial a local number. Oh, where are you? Oh, I'm in South Africa somewhere.
Yeah, I'm in Zimbabwe. As long as I have an Ethernet connection to a fast Internet connection, I'm fine.
Yep.
Well, I mean, VoIP really isn't there yet, although what's actually kind of exciting and terrifying all at the same time is that they're going to eventually convert all the DMS-100s and 5ESSs to packet-based switches instead of circuit-based switches as they are now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Which, in a way, is good, but...
I don't know what that bodes for the future of the quality of the telephone connection. I mean...
Well, that's true. Yeah, they'll start sounding like packet A,
Except that only
what I'm on right now.
Only if they use too low a bit rate, I think. Well, I have to say that Vonage... All in all, when it's working right, Vonage sounds darn good. I would say it actually
sounds better than
a wireline phone if your net connection is
right. If you're not getting too restricted, if you've got a good bandwidth, it sounds great. It sounds better than a regular phone.
The frequency response is not nearly as limited as it is on a regular phone.
And I don't know how that can be true, because it actually goes, obviously, at one end through a regular phone, and yet
it comes into a local office.
Right.
So.
Well, I mean, just to demonstrate the difference between, low bandwidth VoIP and regular T-carrier phone connection, I'm talking to you on VoIP now. Let me go on hold and pick up my wireline phone and speak to you in a second here.
He's going to...
And this is regular T-carrier.
Yeah, that sounds much better.
Yeah.
But again, you're talking packet 8, which is very restricted anyway.
Right.
Much worse than Vonage.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's cheaper.
Sure.
Yes, so, exactly.
And I just kind of use it for playing around with and talking on conferences and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's another interesting little tidbit. Most people, I don't know if it's still true, but when we first got the Vonage, there were a number of conference lines we could not call through there.
And I'm sure it still is.
I don't know if it's still blocked, but it was kind of annoying. They were doing it, I think, because of the type of activities that were going on some of the conferences, let's say.
But, I mean, I don't understand why they would want to do that, because generally when you have these conferences, what happens is that the little CLECs that run the conferences run them specifically for the purpose of billing the local exchange carriers for termination minutes.
Mm.
And so they encourage people, talk for free, and that's how they make the money.
Right, but Vonage wouldn't get anything out of that. In fact, that would encourage people to tie up their network. That's probably why they block it, I'm thinking.
And what was also happening was, actually, I'm going to go back to my VoIP because I don't want to spend too much money on it.
Sure, go ahead.
But what would happen is that, Vonage and Packet 8 were advertising unlimited, and I had a couple of friends who would actually... take that to heart, and they would pretty much leave a phone connection up for a month, and just to see what would happen. And after a while, Vonage or Packet 8 would get really, really pissed off and say, "You can't do that," even though you're advertising unlimited. But now, after a bunch of protests, they seem to have stopped doing that.
Unlimited,
oh, really?
Well, unlimited these days never really means unlimited.
Well, I'm sorry, if you say unlimited, it sure by golly ought to be unlimited. In my opinion, if you're gonna say, you get a real cheap rate, blah 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 blah, that's one thing. But if you say unlimited,
if you're restricting it to 10,000 minutes, just say 10,000 minutes.
That's right.
Yeah.
But it's like a smorgasbord restaurant. In other words, a smorgasbord restaurant is all you can eat, but it's supposed to be limited by you as a human being what you actually want to eat. You're not supposed to take it home. So their answer is it's unlimited as long as the human being is actually sitting there talking. But we don't want you to leave it up 24 hours a day, and when you're out of the house and you're in bed and stuff like that.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Which some people
want to be limited by what a human being would actually use it for.
That makes sense.
Right.
Well, I mean, I've seen these, you know, ISPs that are dial-up, and they'll say unlimited, you know, but not more than 6 hours in a row or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, I always thought that was frustrating.
All I can say is,
if I wanted to listen to a radio station for 18 hours, I figured I ought to be able to.
And I would say that the bottom line is, if it's not going to be unlimited, I don't see how they can advertise it as unlimited. If they're going to put a limit on it, then say it's limited.
It was just a redefining of a word in such a way that it was really annoying, because it was a standard operating procedure for these ISPs and phone companies, and I never did like it.
No, to me that's false advertising.
But then who am I? I'm not the court.
Right. Yeah, right. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But obviously,
a whole other scope of conversation.
What's that?
That's a whole other scope of conversation.
Yes, that's right.
For sure.
That could tie up a whole 4-hour show just on its own.
Yeah, probably could.
Yes.
What exactly did the 3700, in terms of multi-freaks, what was that used for?
The 3700 hertz was very akin to the 2600 hertz.
Okay.
It was for carrier systems. Basically, when that tone is on the line, it's interpreted as the chunk being on hook and available for use.
Right.
And that works from an engineering standpoint for two reasons. A, it indicates that the trunk is available for use, and B, it indicates that the trunk is actually working. So if you need to take a trunk out of service, calls are not going to get routed to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the purpose of that. It just because of the way it worked, it kind of gave a different quality to the connection.
Uh-huh. I was going to say, it was kind of a later thing, as I recall, because I know some of the, most of the blue boxes I knew didn't have it.
Well, typically the way the blue boxing would work is that you would have, at some point between you and the tandem, a 2600 link.
Mm-hmm.
At some point. And so you would whistle that off.
Right.
And typically the 2600 would be kind of a local, not a necessary long distance, because the real long distance is all microwave stuff.
Yep.
But the 2600 was a local toll type connection between you and your nearest number 4 crossbar.
Mm-hmm.
So what would happen is you would, whistle that off. And then you would get a trunk into your local crossbar or tandem or whatever, and then MF the number into that, and then that interpreted that the MFing as coming from the switching system, and then routed your call through the rest of the network automatically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, certainly I didn't, mess with that kind of stuff really too much, but I did used to like the 2600 just to disconnect my call from the other end. Because it was always a lot of fun to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got your whistle.
Yep. And it was interesting to hear it disconnect, and it would, the way the reorder would come through was always different than if it was locally disconnected.
Right, because the reorder would be coming from the crossbar tandem,
mm-hmm,
instead of your local switch, because
yep,
what would happen was you'd whistle it off, and then the register would sit there for like 20 or 30 seconds waiting for a number, then it doesn't get a number, and then you get the reorder from 4A.
Yep.
And of course, you get the recordings from the 4A, too.
Mm-hmm.
Remember busy signals that would do that, where it would transfer the busy signal to the other end, to not to tie up the circuit? There was a time when busy signals in some places would reverse. Every tone of the busy signal would be as though the person answered the phone and hung up. And the originating end would see that pattern of reversals, and after several cycles of that pattern of reversals, the originating end would drop the long distance of the circuit and just put on its own busy signal locally.
That makes sense. Well, what was very funny was I was, there was a recording, at least on the 4A crossbars in New York. We're sorry, but due to a temporary equipment condition, your call did not go through. Will you please try your call again? This is a recording, 2127.
Yep. I remember those.
And what was very funny was I was using some sort of computer search thing. I was searching for, I don't remember what it was, and I typed in my search, and I pressed enter, and it started searching, and then it literally came up with almost the exact text that said, "We're sorry, but due to a temporary equipment condition, your search did not go through. Will you please try it again?"
Yeah, I knew someone had. Speaking of that, what were those, at the end of the message, there was a code, a number. What was that?
Typically, for example, what I will do is I will play you a recording from my local switch, which, let me actually just, what happened? Hang on. Let me dial a number here.
Yeah, because I remember those all my life, and I was like, yep. What is that?
Actually, no. For better quality, just for the radio show, I'll three-way it in. Let me get the conference here again.
If they don't have Vinage, then you could three-way it and use the Vinage Atois.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I would three-way over the Vonage, or for the Packet 8, but it's just too low quality.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Now, we make that joke dealing with Vinage, just a
Vinage Atois.
Okay,
three-way,
yeah,
quality.
So now I'm on the wireline phone. Let me get a disconnected number from my local switch. Hold on just a second.
I'm sorry, the number you have reached is not in service at this time. If you need assistance, please call Directory Assistance. This is a recording, 702-363. I'm sorry, the number you have reached is not in service at this
time. And that, of course, is the famous voice of Jane Barbie, who is dead now.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that they've changed that since I've messed with those things. I haven't dialed one in. I don't remember ever anything that's, you know, called Directory Assistance.
Yeah, that was weird.
That's new, and I also don't remember quite so many numbers. They've added more.
Well, okay, no. 702-363 is the local office code. 702 is the area code, and 363 is one of the prefixes. That recording dates from 1985.
Oh, okay.
Cut over. Now, when you dialed long distance, you would get, you know, like a tandem. For example, actually, let me get a real tandem code so I don't... Actually, I'll use the one in 702. The number 4A crossbar machine in downtown Las Vegas was 7025. And basically, you would have the area code the tandem was located in plus a code which indicated both that it did two things. First, it identified the actual number of the tandem, and secondly, it identified what the hierarchy of the tandem was.
Right.
Because the old network was hierarchical.
Mm-hmm.
There were, you know, like 12 main switching points to go across the United States.
Yep.
Like one was in Atlanta, was in the Atlanta area. It was 4041. And then there was another one in, I don't remember where the rest of them are. I can look them up.
Yep.
But so basically, like 7025 was not really a terribly important tandem, but it was, you know. And then, like, in New York, for example, you had a whole bunch of little sector tandems, like 21318 or 21336 or something.
Ooh.
And those were just for routing calls locally, and that was an incredibly complex routing system. But generally, if you got, like, a 4, that was, you know, kind of a low-ranking tandem. And then
I remember lots of 2s.
Was, yeah, a 2 was a bigger tandem. Like, if you tried to call, like, somewhere in Michigan, for example, you might get 3132,
yep,
which was the number 4A in, I think it's Detroit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Some major switching center in Michigan.
So it's kind of like a diagnostic thing. Someone who knew what they were doing would hear that, would know the area code and what's...
Right, you would know exactly where you were getting it from because that mm-hmm. recording and that number was unique to that very switching entity.
Yep, makes sense.
I mean, even in the same building, you would have several different switching entities with the same, you know, with different numbers. Like you may have 7025 and 7023. Of course, that never happened. But I think 7023 was the 4A in Reno.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I mean, with all the area code splits, the same thing exists on AT&T's network. If you dial over AT&T a disconnected number or a bad prefix on, I believe, which you have to dial a certain code in an area code over AT&T. A certain prefix code,
mm-hmm.
and then what happens is you'll hit the recording on the very AT&T tandem in that area, and those have a unique three-digit identifier. For example, the San Bernardino 4E, which I've talked about earlier, is 113T. And then Oakland, California is 070T, San Jose is 090T, San Francisco is like 081T or something like that.
I don't think I've ever heard any of those.
Yeah. But, if you're not dialing over AT&T, you're never going to hear it.
Well, of course, I used to. But I don't know if that – is that recent or is this been all, you know, forever?
They implemented that around about 1988.
Okay, that probably explains it. I haven't done any kind of searching in that period of time. So
yeah.
That would probably explain it.
What's interesting, though, is that before that, you know, they had 4 ESSs before 1988,
mm-hmm.
but they still used the old codes. And what's interesting is sometimes you will find an old code on a switch. For example, I think 81839 or something is still one of the codes
mm-hmm.
in Southern California for the part north of Los Angeles.
Interesting.
So that explains those codes.
Yeah, that would be North Los Angeles, because our friend Mike Thoreau is in Woodland Hills, and I think he's 818, so...
Yeah, 818 was the upper part of 213, and that split off in 1984. January of 1984, I believe. Was 818.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would make sense. The whole thing with the various sizes of, you know, the numbers for the various tandems, the fives and the fours and stuff.
Well, the five was never really intended to. The five was always intended as a local switch.
Okay, and right, I mean, exactly.
Now it's being reprogrammed to replace the four in AT&T's network, but AT&T is still very much all four EFS.
Right.
The original number four that was installed in Chicago in 1976 is no more. The oldest one is somewhere else from 1976. But they no longer manufacture the four ESS, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
The very last one was installed in Atlanta, Georgia in July of 1999.
Mm-hmm.
There will be no more of them. They're all going to be gone within probably 10 to 15 years.
Uh-huh. And then, of course, the lower numbers are the longer distances and the higher traffic stuff.
Right. Yeah, one is the more important one. But of course now, I mean, that was before you had the capability of, you know, automatic route selection, all the advanced steps you can do with digital switches.
Right.
So, I mean, these days, you know, the numbers don't really mean anything because the same call can be routed so many different ways.
Makes sense.
And thanks to the digital transmission, it's not going to lose any quality at all.
Right. It's lost all it's going to lose.
Yeah. Yeah, the second it hits the analog to digital converter, it's lost everything.
Yep.
Yeah. But the old tandems, the old mechanical tandems had some routing capabilities.
Well, yeah, of course they could reroute things, but not nearly to the extent that the digital ones can.
Right.
And it was much more, in effect, inflexible. It was, you know, certain things could route usually from one number up to one number down or whatever, but you know, basically there were, you know, certainly, now they can do anything they want, just like you can reassign any phone number to any place. It's not stuck by what exchange it's in or whatever.
Right. For example, through the magic of voice over IP, the phone I'm talking to you on now is numbered in Florida, even though I'm in Southern Nevada.
Yep. Yes, indeed. Lots of interesting stuff. And they used to charge fortunes just to move a number part way across town, because we knew a business that did that because they wanted to keep their number when they moved, and they had to pay hundreds of dollars to move the number plus 60 or 80 bucks a month or something just for mileage to have had that number that distance.
But you know, the tariffs are still in effect. If you want a foreign exchange, you can still do that as a foreign exchange and stuff. If you're in a situation where you can't do the number portability to get where you want, you can still use that old tariff and still be expensive.
Right. But I mean, of course, that was because, you know, in those days, you couldn't, you know, 564 was actually the switching entity.
Yep, it was hardwired.
Yeah, it was hardwired. I mean, actually, the way the number portability works these days is, I'm not entirely sure, but I think the way it works is that when you dial, like, say you dial, you know, say 565 is an office all the way on the other side of town, but there's a 565 number in a switch which is, you know, just one switch away from you. So what will happen is you'll dial 565-1212, and then it'll actually go to that switch, and then that switch will forward it on to the other switch.
That could be. I guess that would make sense.
And that's pretty much... Yeah, they could do an database lookup. I don't know. It depends on how advanced.
I forget.
Yeah, there's a number of ways to do it. But, you know, of course, back in the old days, to get foreign exchange service, you had to take up really, really valuable interoffice trunk space because there weren't too many interoffice trunks from one switch to the next. And so, you'd have to do that. And, you know, it was just it was really an amazing amount of work and expense and hardship that had to go into it to actually get your phone to be served out of that other switch.
Yeah, yep. When I lived in Northwest Indiana, I checked into it once just to see, and I couldn't believe the cost and the effort to do it. It was it was incredible because I lived in the south part of the county, and it was very rural, and it was long distance to call anywhere else in the county just about, and same for them to call me. So I actually checked into that, getting like a Gary or Hammond, Indiana number, and it was just so expensive to do that.
Yeah, and of course, the other reason for it being so expensive is that because there are so few trunks available that they could really realistically do that on. Mm-hmm. If people in any sort of number started doing that, then they would, you know, really, really be in a bind as far as trunk space goes. So part of the high cost was really to deter people from doing that kind of casually.
Yeah.
You had to be really serious about it if you wanted to.
Yep.
But you know what they did in L.A.? Because the house I was in, LA, grew up in L.A., we had this. We were in GTE territory, and if you went a little bit farther east, you'd hit a Pacific telephone prefix that could call the downtown. That just had a very different calling area. So a lot of people wanted a foreign exchange in those that particular place. And they put in a fake foreign exchange where the very same switch, like we had a 475 number, which was the native, one of the native prefixes for the GTE switch room, and then that same switch room had the 279 prefix, which was served out of exactly the same equipment and stuff, but it was treated billing-wise like a foreign exchange into the Pacific telephone territory. But and it even gave, if you dial the time recording or the weather recording, it would give you the Pacific telephone version of those, and yet it was really operated out of the GTE switch and was not a true foreign exchange, but just billed like one.
That's weird.
Well, what's bizarre is that I was considering moving to Los Angeles somewhat recently, and so I investigated this place, which was just on, it was right near Beverly Center in Los Angeles. And the switch that serves the Beverly Center, I looked into that because I was wondering, what phone number am I going to get? Before I'm wondering about anything else, I'm wondering about my phone number.
Of course.
And so what's weird is not only did that switch serve 310 and 323 numbers, but it served numbers in three entirely different rate centers.
Hmm.
Just for billing purposes. I mean, depending on where you were in relation to that switch, you would get an entirely different billing, despite the fact that all the numbers came out of the exact same switch.
Exactly, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's
true. That was extraordinarily odd.
That's a true phone freak. I don't care about what's in my neighborhood or what services are available, except that I want to know what rate center I'm out of,
Yeah,
what
exactly.
Switch,
you want to know how your phone's going to work.
Well, it's kind of like when we moved to Macomb, our first question is, can we put a dish here?
Yes.
You're talking about, numbers that straddled.
And antennas.
numbers that straddled other number or switches or prefixes.
Well, that's one of the things I remember in the 70s. I don't know how long it continued, but people used to move numbers from, they'd call and call forward things to other numbers to get around the local restrictions of, of the mile area, because they actually had a very low cost phone service. But again, you were limited how far you could call without paying a toll charge.
Well, I was going to point out a really strange setup here over in Northwest Indiana. If you lived in Hammond, East Chicago, Whiting, and maybe even part of Gary, you actually had a couple of prefixes across the border in Illinois that were the south side of Chicago and one of the suburbs of Chicago. There were a local call. I mean, you had to dial all, everything, the area code and all that, but it was still a local call. But if you tried to dial Chicago directly or any other suburb from this Indiana phone, it was expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So, one of the things that I heard of someone doing is that they would have a phone in that area that would dial across, across state line fine, and then, I don't know if it was a forwarder or a diverter or something over on the Illinois side that then from that phone made calls into Chicago, as a local call. So it was kind of a way of getting around,
Well, I mean, the same sort of nonsense is in effect today. And like in the Bay Area, I lived in Concord. And from Concord, Walnut Creek is a local call and Martinez is a local call. And there are like a couple numbers in East Oakland that are a local call. But as soon as you start dialing like Berkeley, that's what's called a Zone 3 call, and that's not really the domain of your local toll carrier, but it's too far for Pacific Bell to charge it as a local call, so that's always was always an expensive proposition calling Berkeley from Concord.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because what was odd was my Zone 3 calls were like twice the price of my local toll calls.
Yike.
I think I had like 3 cents a minute for local toll, and like Zone 3 Pacific Bell wanted to charge me 7 cents a minute.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was all sorts of nonsense. But fortunately, Las Vegas is one gigantic rate center,
mm-hmm.
which makes for a number of interesting things, like you can easily port numbers entirely across the city, and pretty much if you're dialing a 702 number, you never, never, never have to worry about if it's a toll call or not.
Right.
And a bunch of other interesting things. But then, of course, you know, you don't have all the fun of all the different rate centers.
Yep.
Of course, only a person like me or Mark Brunet would consider that fun.
Yeah, right. Yes.
I got a question I've been kind of mulling over how to ask it, and I don't really know how to ask it, and we are actually running out of time.
Yeah.
So right, I'm just going to phrase it as a, you know, former freak / current freak, whatever. Since all of this stuff, for the most part, that we talk about is gone, what is left to do? What can you still do? What are alternatives? Like you said, obviously you're looking at rate centers and where can I call and stuff like that. But I'm just kind of curious, you know, what's kind of left?
Well,
what's still fun, I guess?
The first question I have to ask is, what do you mean by do?
I think he basically means,
according to
what would make, you know, what would make in effect somebody still have fun with the phone. And I guess the point is that now, obviously, there's all kinds of things like Vonage and other things that we could only have dreamed of 30 years ago. The incentive in terms of free calls is certainly gone, but probably there's still the understanding
still
of the network.
Numbers, see who answers, you know.
Right. There's still the thrill of knowing how the network works. And
I have a message here that I should probably read. Mr. Bob in Chicago here says Sherman Skolnick is still around. So
okay.
Just so you know.
Okay, but I mean,
thanks
okay, I guess
for that.
The way I would compare it is the difference between, you know, the old network was kind of like tinkering with electronic components on a breadboard versus computer hacking, right, which is today. And so, I mean, really today you don't have all the you don't have all the interesting physical aspects of it. You really can't hear things differently as they're going over different routings or whatnot. But it's kind of the same thing where, like, you understand how it works and you understand the reasons behind it working, and that makes it interesting because no longer are you just picking up a phone and dialing a number. You're actually doing something and you understand how it works. Like, for example, the SS7 protocol, which is Signaling System 7, is the out-of-band call setup and teardown protocol that's used in the network today. And I spent a weekend learning how that works, and that is immensely fascinating, even though you cannot hear it going on.
That makes sense. Now, isn't there still, I don't know if it's still used much, but I know at least in the early 90s, I think there was still some, it was kind of like out of band, but kind of in band. It was outside of the 300 to 3000 range, but just barely, and some of it was still going on the same phone lines. And what used to happen is we would use equipment to try to extend the quality of our phone calls to the radio services we worked with. And as I recall, there were, you know, we could sometimes screw stuff up if we weren't careful.
No, I don't know anything about that.
Well, there still seemed to be some signaling, say between 3,000 and 4,000.
You may have been hitting an N1 carrier trunk, which would have been 3,700.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
But it obviously was still existent at the time. And
right. I mean, it took a while for all the stuff to go. I mean, by 1990, a lot of the crossbar and panel and everything was all gone.
Mm-hmm.
But there was still some step, and there was still a lot of number one ESS.
Mm-hmm.
And number one ESS, of course, is from the 60s and 70s.
Right.
So there you still have the potential for a lot of, you know, N1 carrier trunking that, you know, just happens to work, and there's no real reason to change it just quite yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that time, fiber optics were still kind of prohibitively expensive. I mean, remember that in the early 90s, Sprint was still advertising, you know, that theirs was the first network to fully go all digital.
Yep.
And it was so clear you could hear a pin drop and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I think you probably nailed that one. There certainly was no 2600s, at least anywhere I knew of by that time, that were still useful. So I never was running across that. But definitely there was something when we were pushing the envelope that we would hit that screwed things up. And I think you probably, you know, I should have given that a thought. I knew it was something to do with some out of, you know, in effect in band, but out of band stuff. But I wasn't sure anymore. You know, I wasn't really sure what it was, but I bet that was it.
Are there still places in the country that you can make things like, get the numbers read back to you? Phones you're dialing from, stuff like that.
I mean, they have that in Las Vegas and in California. That phone repairman uses that.
Well, there's also 800 numbers because 800 numbers know what your number is and
right.
You can't
right.
Block it. There's several of those.
You know, that's an interesting thought. As cheap as those things are getting, I suppose if you want to have your own little, you know, I've gone to a friend's house. I want to find out what their number is. Just get your own 800 number. Then you can get it off, you know. Your call report or something, you know.
Right.
Yeah, but I can give you some 800 numbers that do that.
That do that.
I mean, there are some, yeah.
That's cool. I mean,
let's get my list here, but.
Well, should we give those out over the radio? Are they well known enough already?
I don't know. Well, okay. One that's just trivial to remember is 800-444-4444.
Cool.
That's MCI.
That one does. It's not really meant to read out your phone number. It's meant for you to call up MCI and inquire about services for them. But since it knows your phone number already, it'll pass your phone number on to the operator without you having to tell it to them. So one of the first things it says, welcome to MCI or something, then it says, are you calling about so-and-so, so-and-so, and it reads back your phone number. within several seconds, it'll do that.
So kind of an unintended consequence there, yeah.
Yeah, that one's been working successfully for a long time.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's kind of neat.
Yeah. 444-4444. MCI got a lot of those easy to dial 444-4444 numbers. Whatever.
Since we don't have much time left, should we do the push button water plant stories?
Yes, I think that's a good way to close it off.
just again, some history stuff, so that doesn't work anymore. But there was a long period of time when you could dial directly, but you wouldn't get charged right away. The theory was that if someone, suppose someone's about to answer the phone and they pick it up and it's the other way around. Suppose you call someone, it rings a few times and you're hanging up, but after you take the phone away from your ear and while you're moving your arm down to hang it up, what if the person answered then? It wouldn't be fair to charge you, right? So there used to be a time delay of 2 or 3 seconds before you'd get charged when you made a long-distance call, including for payphones. You made a call from a payphone, it would typically not take your money until 2 or 3 seconds after the person answered. So we would take advantage of that in various ways. Like, for example, we were talking about the toll-free looparounds before, but how do you get someone to meet you on the toll-free looparound? If you just want to talk to someone right now and you don't have any advanced schedule for them to meet you, or you wouldn't want to waste your money making a long distance call just to ask them to meet you on the toll-free loop around. So what we would all do is answer the phone in the following way. We'd lift up the handset a little bit, put your finger on the button, take the handset up to your ear, then let go of the button so that the phone's at your ear and you're psychologically prepped that someone might yell something at you very quickly and hang up on you. So for example, they might yell the name of a toll-free loop-around at you, which meant that you would then hang up and call in and meet them there. Or maybe if they were at a payphone, we would be psychologically prepped to be able to accept a 7-digit number, right, that someone would yell at you suddenly. So if someone yells a 7-digit number at you and hangs up, you call them back at that payphone or whatever. So Albert A., our friend in L.A., he had this thing going with his mother that He taught his mother how to answer that way, and when he was on a trip, let's say he had some fruit trees and different plants and things, and he was afraid that his mother would forget to water them. So he would call up, and his mother would answer, you know, that special way. Then he would yell, water plants, and click, and then hang up, so he could pass that message to her for free. And he had this recording line for a while that was based on an 8-track player. We all of us did that at one point. If you wanted a recording line, the kind of an 8-track player was the ideal way to do it.
Oh, yeah, because
it would be a continuous loop.
Right.
And then also you could have four different, you have multiple material on the same cartridge, just push the channel button to switch to a different, the track button, you know, switch to a different track.
Yep.
Right. So when he was going away on a trip, he would prepare four different outgoing messages, and then depend on his mother to remember what day to switch messages. Okay. So he would call up the recording, and remember, get a couple of seconds. So he could call up his recording line and listen for a couple of seconds to see if the recording had switched yet.
Mm-hmm.
And if his mother forgot to switch the recording, he would call her up and yell, push button, click, and then hang up. And then he'd call his recording back to watch for her to switch the button, push the button to verify she did it.
Weird.
And stuff like that. And then, so that sometimes if he needed her to push the button and water plants both, he'd call her up and yell, push button, water plants, click.
Yike. Yeah, there were all kinds of things people did, it sounds like, and
yeah.
This is, we're going to...
So what happened was that at one point, it's better if you tell the story. Tell what happened when she didn't push the button.
One time he calls her up and yells, push button, then he calls the recording, she hasn't changed it yet. He calls her up, push button, calls up the recording, she hasn't changed it yet. So he does this for several minutes to give her plenty of time, and she still doesn't push the button. So he's really pissed off that he now has to pay a long-distance call. He actually has to call and talk to her now, and he's really pissed off about it. But he calls her up and warns her, you have to push the button. If you don't push the button within the next 5 minutes, the machine's going to catch on fire and burn your whole house down and stuff like that. You know, just to get her to finally go down there and push the button. Of course, if it was me, I wouldn't push the button. If someone told me that, I had to go unplug the machine, because who wants a dangerous machine like that sitting around? But,
I love that story.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, that was very interesting, and unfortunately, I kind of missed the last details because we're kind of setting up for the next show. But I think I got enough of it. But we're kind of down to the wire here, I guess. So. It was definitely nice hearing from you guys.
We're going to have to do this again very soon.
Yes, I very much enjoyed being on the show.
If you're up to it, we'll be more than happy to have you on a periodic basis.
Yep.
Okay, great.
Sounds great. We appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Any websites you guys want to push?
Well, there's stromcarlson.com, which is my website, stromcarlson.com, and then there's phonetrips.com, which is Mark Brunet's website.
And that's a great one. I've already looked at it. Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
And from there, there'll be links to other wonderful things.
Yeah, in fact, if he's out there, Alan, or a.k.a. Mimsy, actually played some of that stuff from Phone Trips on our station. Oh, geez. Well, at least
a year and a half,
before
the station actually existed.
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Still on the satellite.
Really enjoyed it. That was the first time I'd ever heard that stuff. That was cool.
Yep.
I got knocked off for nothing. I just got silent, so it just wasn't there anymore.
Hmm.
Well,
all right, I guess that's pretty much it.
Okay, well, thanks so much for calling and getting this thing set up, and we will get in touch with you, and we'll get you back on fairly soon.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks
definitely.
A lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. And that just about does it for us for the talk portion of the program.
Yep, we'll be feeding Saturday Morning Confusion pretty quick. As soon as
That's
we can
right.
get some music going.
That's right. And, well, mainly...